きっと消えない今日は言えない元通りにはもうできないあの頃に君を残したまま
Listening to a Talk of Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is our part two of our winter 2021 anime season reviews. We have a whole crap ton of shows to go through. Chris has a migraine, but he's trucking through it, apparently. I told him that we can do it another time, but he doesn't want to do another time. So this shows the determination of my co-host. Everybody, clap in appreciation. Pachi, 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 pachi. So yeah, you excited? You excited for this list? I mean, technically we gave everybody the list last time, but I added a bunch because I forgot that I need to put all the Netflix shows that dropped in full this season, because I do that a lot with the winter and spring season. So yeah, we have a lot to go through. We have Pacific Rim the Black, Supposed a Kid from the Last Dungeon, Boonies Moved to a Starter Town, The Way of the House Husband, The Hidden Dungeon Only I Can Enter, High Rise Invasion, Lock Horizon, Azur Lane, The Short, Horimiya, Show by Rock Stars, Kimono Jaihin, Eurocamp Season 2, Dr. Stone Stone Wars, The Quintessential Quintuplets Season 2, That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime Season 2, and Be the Beginning Succession. That is a crap ton of shows. So it's a perfect episode to do when Chris has a migraine. But I told him whenever I do my Netflix shows, he can just rest his eyes. So... Gambatte, Chris. Gambatte.
We can make it. I promise.
We should jump right into it because there's way too many shows to go through.
This is nothing compared to taking care of dogs when you have a migraine. That's worse.
Well, guts. Guts. But yeah, a lot of shows to go through. Again, we're at talkerspirit.com. That's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old. Great comedian in the form, links at the top. Social media links on the right side and all that good stuff. And yes, a link to our YouTube channel, which I will do separate reviews for pretty much all these shows, except for the ones that I did not cover this episode. So definitely go there and support us. We're almost to monetization. We're like just a smidge more. Just a smidge more. So exciting stuff.
How much more do you need?
I think like 200 watch hours.
Oh yeah,
4,000. So we're almost there. We're almost there. It's good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, jump right into it. We have our first one is Pacific Rim: The Black, which is streaming on Netflix. It ran for 7 episodes, done by Studio Polygon Pictures. The source is, of course, the Pacific Rim movie franchise in the West. The writer was Greg Johnson and Craig Kyle, and the director was Masayuki Uemoto, Susumu Sugai, and Takashi Iwata. And yes, when basically, for those that aren't aware, I don't know, sure why you wouldn't, Pacific Rim basically takes place when the Pacific Rim happens and mankind is being overthrown by these kaiju, these gigantic monsters, and that are kind of coming out of these breaches in the earth, and they're basically getting overthrown. And so mankind is fighting back with these gigantic mecha robots that they get inside. And the interesting thing about these particular machines that they ride, what were they called? Forgetting the name of them. I had it and I lost it. It's like it was in my head and I lost it. But they fight in these machines, and the interesting thing is that it's too much for one person to kind of Neuralink into it and control it. So they actually have to have two pilots, you know, basically covering the left and right side of the brain of the machine itself. And they have to, like, Neuralink to each other. So they have to kind of open themselves mentally to the other person, their co-pilot. And then they fight the kaiju and protect mankind. So Jaegers, that's what they were called. Jaegers. I knew I had it. I knew I had it. But yeah, in Pacific Rim The Black, we basically follow two children, Haley and Taylor. They are siblings, and at the very beginning, they are being protected by their parents, who are Jaeger pilots, and their parents basically take them, along with a lot of other people, inside of this bus, transport them to this kind of secluded location, and that's where they kind of basically build a colony, because they stay there for about 5 years while their parents go off to fight. And then one day, Haley discovers a kind of training Jaeger that's underground. And when she activates it, it calls a Jaeger in, or not a Jaeger, a kaiju in. The kaiju basically destroys the colony that they're living in. And so Haley and Taylor decide to go out on this training Jaeger and find their parents, which have never returned. So, and over time, they run into other survivors, get like a little bit of a, you know, different groups and colonies that are kind of being created in the wake of essentially an apocalypse where mankind has been wiped out, and they try to survive while dealing with the new world, basically. as most post-apocalyptic worlds go these days, it just turns into mankind is eviler than the monsters, right? Yeah. So let's just get it out of the way. It did make me question whether to put this on the podcast. I you know, pretty quickly put it into a YouTube video just to kind of post my thoughts on it. But I really was debating whether I really want to call this an anime and throw it out here, just because of the fact that besides Polygon Picture and the directors that are working on the animation for this, everything else was kind of Western. That was the biggest disappointment for me. Granted, I jumped right into it because I seen Polygon Pictures. I'm a fan of Polygon Pictures. I've supported a lot of their works. And this is kind of another evolution of their works. You know, their style, the way they cel shade and everything is getting a lot better. But unfortunately, this wasn't the Pacific Rim anime that I wanted. Because back when I watched Pacific Rim, I wasn't a huge fan. I didn't follow, like, everything that came out Pacific Rim. But I did enjoy the concept. And, of course, the main thought that came in my head when I first watched the, you know, the Western movie was, man, this would be amazing as an anime because, yes, let's just be honest here, at least from my opinion, I don't feel that Western writers are willing to do things that are kind of risky and kind of gritty. And the concept of the Jaegers and the mind linking that happens opens up to so many possibility of inner conflict, mental trauma, and stuff that I think a Japanese writer would be more willing to get into, whereas a Western one would not. And unfortunately, with this one, this was completely nothing against Greg Johnson and Craig Kyle, all the writers in the West, but this isn't the Japanese writing that I was looking for in a Japanese version of Pacific Rim.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to ask you, was did they even touch any of that stuff? Because that's what I was most curious as is, are they, did they even broach the idea of, basically, I'm guessing there's a male and a female pilot, you know, crossing that line would be very interesting for them to do.
Yeah, and technically, again, they did that in the original stuff. That was a thing.
Yeah.
But they're safe about it. And it's not that I need to have, like, really awkward stuff in my anime and stuff, or my storytelling. It's just, there is so many creative writing things that Japan, and this is the reason that we go to anime, is because there's this different type of storytelling that we've never really seen before, and that's what makes it interesting, that's what makes it fascinating, and the lack of, I guess, filters that they often have, let's be honest, the lack of filters they have is a big thing of why we enjoy it. It's that, wow, you didn't hold anything back here, that's what's clever about it, that's the storytelling that we want, and unfortunately, this just doesn't have it, because, again, nothing against them. This has Western writers, and it's funny because I think that we talked about this not being really anything that they were controlling back when we talked about the adaptation, but I forgot about it. And so when I just dived headstrong right into this thing, you know, dove right into it and watched it, the thing I realized at the end of it, when I finished this particular series, I was like, wow, that had no guts in it. What happened to my anime Pacific Rim that I was expecting? And sure enough, I look it up and like, oh, there's why. They didn't have full creative control of this. So obviously it's not going to have that creative writing that I was looking for. And it did feel like it was lacking that, because there was some interesting stuff they did with the Neuro stuff, like the whole aspect of them using it to essentially interrogate somebody. They got into, May had a screwed up backstory, but it was never to an impactful point. Like with May's backstory, she was basically told to kill. But who did she kill? You don't know. You just seen these quick glimpses of her shooting things that you didn't even know what she was shooting. Oh, apparently she's traumatized because of that. That's what I mean. In a Japanese storyteller, they would get really gritty about it. They would show her being traumatized by this. This was just her turning and shooting at who knows what. So she's traumatized. That's what I mean, is that lack of guts that you just, that we're familiar with when we look at the difference between the two, this basically two points of media writing, I guess. So that aside, let me put that aside. I beat that to death. It was an entertaining show. It's still fun to watch. I think that Haley and Taylor were great main characters. They felt like siblings. No, they didn't feel like anime siblings. They felt like real siblings. And I did enjoy them as a pair, because, I mean, I'm familiar with siblings and I know how they act. And these two acted and felt like they were actual siblings. They looked out for each other. Taylor obviously wants to protect his sister. That aspect felt, familiar, and it felt like it worked. And so, totally give them credit. Now, granted, my only unfortunate thing about this adaptation and this Netflix posting is that they did not have the Japanese dub, and that sucked, because they did a good job. I enjoyed all the acting in this show. The only thing that really stood out and was a sore thumb for me is Haley. Haley, especially in the flashbacks, didn't sound like a kid. Didn't sound like a young girl. She just sounded like her older self. And it was like, are you even trying to make... Did they not tell you that you're voicing her as a younger character right now? But the other characters, they did fine. I think that the voice acting was fine. I would have preferred to have watched it in Japanese, but they didn't even give us the option over here. I'm not sure if it's just a thing where they forgot it or if they were trying to boost attention to their dubbing studios over here. I don't know, but it is what it is. It was written by English writers, so it's, I guess technically I shouldn't complain too much. The combat sequences were all right. Most of them were pretty, forgettable. They were basic stuff. There was a couple of them that had some cool moments in it. Having like the infected kaiju, or the infected Jaeger was kind of interesting. I think that they had that kind of stuff in the previous stuff as well, so that's not a thing. I thought that it got really crazy anime at the very end, but then I found out that stuff was in other previous works that was already done, so I guess that's a thing already. So I was like, whoa, what are they doing? They're totally going anime. And as again, this is before I realized that it's not wrote by Japanese writers, and then I'm like, oh wait, never mind. They were already going down that crazy direction already, so that's fine. I liked a lot of the writing. The comedy writing was pretty solid. I loved a lot of the kind of back and forth between Loa and Taylor and Haley. Basically, the snarky AI versus the snarky human, which was a lot of fun. Jill was a great character. May was a great character. I'm okay with Shane. He definitely was your, I don't know what you call him, like the... what's the guy from Walking Dead? I don't know why I'm totally blanking on his name. Negan. He's kind of like the Negan character. He's the, rule by an iron fist. This is a post-apocalyptic. We're going to make our own kind of rules here. If you don't do correctly, you're basically expendable, so to speak. So a lot of that stuff was in there. Boy, the aspect of the boy kind of got into my conversation earlier. You kind of expected where they were going to go with that character. But, yeah, he just kind of existed for most of the show. So it doesn't, nothing really much to say there. But yeah, so the concept early is just, you know, two siblings trying to survive in a post-apocalyptic setting, running into another civilization that has their own rule of thumb or rule of iron and fist. A lot of hints at what could be coming later. This definitely did feel like a kind of a first chapter of a story. So keep that in mind. It technically doesn't really have a finish at all. So, I mean, it feels like a good solid chapter close, but it definitely is not finished in any way, shape, or form. So I haven't heard of any kind of, you know, sequels or anything for it, but I'm sure Polygon Pictures is open for it. But yeah, it's more solid Polygon Pictures animation that I enjoy. Fun mechas fighting gigantic kaiju. Some intrigue into, you know, the aspect of the Neuralink stuff and the effects that it has on the people, which I thought was interesting as well. They did a lot of that stuff with Joel, which was interesting, this idea of trying to find a co-pilot and the effects of not syncing very well and making comatose people. But yeah, pretty solid. I enjoyed it. It was a good little adventure. Not really, like I said, much of a conclusion to it. Again, very, very safe riding, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is. If you're looking for a fun kaiju fighting thing and you don't mind CGI of Polygon Pictures, definitely check it out. Just don't expect it to have any kind of conclusions or anything. But, yeah. Mei's a solid character. I really did enjoy her, too. That's Pacific Rim, The Black. Check that out if that sounds interesting to you. Suppose a kid from the last dungeon, Boonies, moved to a starter town, or Tateba, last dungeon, Mai no Mura no Shonen ga Joban no Machi de Kurasu Yona Monogatari. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Leiden Films. The source is light novel. The genres are adventure and fantasy. And this one follows a boy named Lloyd, who, as the title would lead you to believe, is a kid from the last dungeon town, or town near the last dungeon. And he moves to a starter town, which is like a way further location from the last dungeon, so the weaker area. Because he believes that he is the weakest of his village, and he wants to get stronger just like his brother. And so he goes to the first town, joins the academy there, tries to get stronger. And all the while, everybody around him either are terrified of the aura of power that is around him, are puzzled by the fact that he is so dang strong, or don't want to tell him that he's actually super strong because they want him to not lose his drive to become stronger. So yeah, when he goes there, he lives with a girl named Marie, and Marie obviously has some strong connections to the kingdom itself, but she kind of takes care of him, you know, basically because Akka asked her to, which Akka is the tribe leader of the last dungeon town, who is madly in love with Lloyd. At the academy, there's Selene, the belt princess, who is madly in love with Lloyd because he removed a curse from her very easily. Riho, who is a girl that has like a kind of a machine arm, and she basically just wants to do anything to make money because she's from a orphanage basically in the past. And yeah, that's basically the opening cast. And later on, there's some investigators that join the team and fun and shenanigans happen. So yeah, your thoughts on the supposed kid from Last Dungeon, Boonies, moved to a starter town.
I actually kind of really enjoyed this. There was a lot of goofy things that they did in there. A lot of playing with different tropes involved with kind of the fantasy world, the kind of RPGs, a lot of stuff like that that they just kind of toyed with and goofed around with. From like Andrew was mentioning, the Riho character, who is pretty much a rogue. You've got Selene as this kind of Ojo character. You've got Philo as this kind of overpowered physical fighter. Each one of these characters has different things. Marie being kind of I don't know if I should even mention that she was only in the first episode or two, so I guess it doesn't really matter. Her being kind of the lost princess, go on a quest to go save the Lost Princess, and the Lost Princess is right next to you the entire time. So it was really fun to kind of goof around with a lot of these tropes, and I had a lot of fun with this. My only kind of thing that makes this show not kind of like the best of the season, other than the fact that we had some really fantastic shows this season, was that kind of a couple of the characters were a little bit too obnoxious, and they did kind of grate after a certain point. But other than
who could that be? Who could that be, Chris? Definitely not Celine. Who was it then? You're not going to admit that Celine. Who was it?
She may have possibly been one of them, and then the other one might have been a character who came through a crystal ball to follow Lloyd around.
Oh no, you are not talking smack about Alka. You are not talking smack about Alka. Alka was a gem.
I loved them both. I really did. It's just that they did get an they were very obnoxious, and they, like Andrew was mentioning in his YouTube review of it, they did totally dominate the scene every time they were on the screen. So it was not I did like the humor, and in a way, it was kind of funny that Andrew was pointing out the fact that, yes, Chris was right. And yes, I was also kind of wrong, because when it comes down to it, yes, I love Celine.
You made fun of me, and now you're like, oh, crap, I can't make fun of him anymore.
Yeah, I can't technically make fun of the fact that while I do think that Celine was hilarious, her humor does grate after a certain point, because like Andrew had mentioned, she totally dominates the screen. And Alka, the chief of the town where Lloyd's comes from, she's very dominating when it comes to the screen. And although her humor is absolutely hilarious, she is technically very dominating when she gets on the screen. Now, having both Alka and Celine on the screen, that is kind of funny, because both of them do dominate the screen, and so both of them trying to take the complete control of the scene is kind of fun to see. But when it comes down to it, all of the other characters do get drowned out. I mean, when it comes down to it, yes, they went into Riho's story, but everybody else is absolutely forgettable. I mean, Marie, about the only thing that I know is that she's the princess. Philo, when it comes down to it, she came from somewhere else, and she fell in love with Lloyd because he was strong. That's it. Because the rest of the show is dominated by Celine and Alka. But you made me talk about this too long. I liked the show.
And that's the frustrating thing, is that, and that's pretty much what I went through, is like, I'm fine with Celine, I'm fine with Riho, I'm fine with Philo, I'm fine with Alka, I'm fine with Lloyd, I'm fine with all these characters. The problem is that they kind of open up with a joke, and then that joke becomes their encompassing factor, and they don't really kind of... The writer, I guess, doesn't do much to evolve the characters over time, so most of the jokes kind of get stagnant pretty quickly, even though the initial execution of them is really hilarious. I think the only one that really kind of never got really that old is Lloyd's joke, with the idea of him being super overpowered and just terrifying a lot of people. Like when Chrome first meets him at the bar, it's like this moment of like this dread of like, there is a death threat in this room right now, and I have to squelch it. It's just Lloyd, who is like the most purest boy ever, that you just want to protect. He is too pure boy. He's just so lovable and just wholesome. But like I said, it the unfortunate thing is that everything else kind of takes a lot of the attention, and they're kind of never kind of evolving with the jokes themselves. But my whole point with Celine was really in the idea that she is technically a Yandere character. And unfortunately, Yandere characters cannot not take over the room. They will, any scene that they are in, because of the nature of a Yandere who is extremely crazy, overprotective, and jealous, it's an impossibility for them not to be the center of attention every time. The example I gave was that there's one scene where Marie just wakes up and she walks into the main room and she's like half asleep and says, "Lloyd, please feed me. I'm too tired to eat." And so he's like, "Okay, I'll feed you." And I'm like, "Oh, this is going to be a funny moment. What is it? What's going to happen here?" Boom, Celine shows up. Obviously, she's in the room. She's going to take over the scene because she's a Yandere character. So it's nothing against her as a character. It's just that her inherently as a Yandere is going to take over every scene because of how that archetype works. It just doesn't work any other way. It just can't, because otherwise you'd be going, why isn't Celine reacting to this? And that's your question that's going to come up. So that's the unfortunate thing. Other than that, like I said, most of the other jokes are great when they're first kind of introduced. It's just unfortunately, the writer doesn't really do much to evolve the jokes over time. So most of them kind of get stagnant after a while. It didn't look great either. This is probably besides Hidden Dungeon, this is probably the one show that I think struggled the most to keep, you know, solid on model characters. So most of the time it kind of looked wonky. Not terrible. It still moved. So that's always a plus when things actually move. But yeah, it is the concept really kind of hits is the idea of the character that's super overpowered, being from the last dungeon town with a lot of characters around him. They had some interesting aspects of the world itself that they kind of opened up. The aspects, they went into a little bit of the last dungeon itself. The idea of the last dungeon town being this kind of mythological place where they don't want the strong warriors are typically the ones that go out and save the world from the Demon King and stuff. And they often don't want them to get involved with human matters because, you know, obviously if this great hero were to have to get involved with two kingdoms fighting each other over territories, they would be, you know, disenchanted to help humans, you know, survive against demon lords in the future. Them making crops to help famine, all that kind of stuff was really cool when they got into that stuff. It's just, it was typically a background noise, if anything, to everything else happening in the show. So yeah, solid comedy here and there, especially in the introduction of the characters. Just most of it just gets kind of overplayed with every single one of them and don't really evolve too much. So that's Hidden Dungeon, not Hidden Dungeon. That's Last Dungeon. Suppose the kid from the Last Dungeon. Suppose the kid from the Hidden Dungeon moved to a starter. Only I can enter. Yeah. The Way of the House Husband is the next one, or Goku Shufu Do. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 5 episodes, done by Studio JC staff. The genres are comedy, romance, slice of life. And the director was Chiaki Kon, who did Backstreet Girls, which is important to note. We'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, this one follows the immortal Tatsu, who is a guy that recently stopped being a Yakuza. He was known as the immortal Tatsu, or the immortal dragon. He's now known as Tatsu. He lives with his wife, Miku. And like I said, he's kind of given up his life as a Yakuza, or a gang member, and decided to live the life of a house husband. And that, you know, of course, turns into crazy shenanigans because you have this guy that has a very intimidating aura about him, the way he kind of presents himself and, you know, walks around and everything. He looks like a gangster, but, you know, he's not really trying to. It's just his nature. And that often turns into crazy misunderstandings as people around him are obviously intimidated by him. Think he's going to steal things. He's going to hurt somebody. But, you know, all the while he just wants to be a house husband. He wants to support his wife. He wants to, you know, go grocery shopping. He just doesn't want to get involved in gang violence anymore. But unfortunately, again, due to misunderstandings or people from his past trying to pull him back in, he's constantly kind of having to deal with those situations. And of course, all in a kind of comedic way, because this is a comedy. So yeah. So first thing, I absolutely love Kenjiro Suda. And he voices Tatsu, and he is incredible. We've always loved him. He is an incredible voice actor. We've loved him ever since the days of Nicholas at Gangsta, the show Gangsta. And that continues here. He absolutely encompasses this character. He just embodies this character through and through. Actually, he's actually in the live action of this, which I don't know if it was just one single episode or not, but I need to check that out because, yeah, he's fantastic as his character. So if he's doing a live action version of it, I'm sure that that will be a lot more comedic, just because my second thing that I have to get into, which is I hate whoever decided to make this not animated. I am absolutely furious of the job they did on this. I know a lot of people are saying it was the director. No, it was the original source material creator wanted it this way. I'm sorry, but yeah, I guess you can find somebody that would confirm one way or another, but the way that a lot of this stuff goes down, it's really hard to really nail who did it, because a lot of people are just going to say that it was what was wanted, and they're not going to admit that it wasn't wanted. And that's why I am suspicious at, you know, any comment made about this, because I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with, but at some point Crunchyroll had these kind of animated mangas that they had on their site where you could watch a manga and it would basically, you know, shift from panel to panel, and nothing was really animated. They would sometimes cut out certain characters and kind of move them across the screen, not really animating, but kind of sliding them. And that's really what this is. None of this, I wouldn't call this animation. I would call this, I would be as bold enough to say that really all this is somebody taking the manga panels, coloring them, scanning them, and zooming in and out every now and then on the panels to make it look like it's animated. This was not animated in an actual sense that we're familiar with. And that's what's really frustrating, because the only thing that's bad about this show is that it's not animated. Everything else is absolute perfection. Like I said, Kendro Suda and the rest of the seiyus involved with this did an incredible job. Kendro Suda made this show. He makes the comedy. He makes the character. It is, cannot be undersold. Kendro Suda as Tatsu is amazing. He did an incredible job. I love his character so much. The writing is phenomenal. The mangaka, their writing is phenomenal. I loved all the comedy. I laughed so much watching the show. Like, there wasn't a too long of a time between, too much gaps between me just laughing out loud when I was watching the show. The only bad part, again, is the lack of animation. It's just a slideshow. And that is infuriates me, because this could be a perfect show, a 100 out of 10 show, if it weren't for the fact that it's not really an anime. It's not really animated. It's just a slideshow. I kind of joked in my video, I'm like, you might as well just made a radio drama at that point. There really, because all you're doing here is selling us on the voices. And yeah, I guess technically on the mangaka's art, but yeah, it frustrates me. And, it, and like I said, it's hard to really say that it's one person or another. Like I said, Chiaki Khan technically did Backstreet Girls, and they did a similar thing there, but this is to an extreme. But whoever made the decision, I don't really care at this point. It sucks, and I think it ruined a perfect show in the end, because I couldn't get over the fact that it wasn't really moving. Now, granted, you can make the argument that most comedies aren't really, like, insanely animated, but I wouldn't mind it so much. It's just every now and then when you have those moments where, like, a character's running down the street, and it's just a still sliding across the street. That's when it bugs me. Like, I don't mind, like, when they're sitting in a room, they're not moving around, or hair's not moving. It's just the action points having a still slide across the screen is like, oh, gosh, please don't. Just don't even show it move. Just show a close-up and just say he's running. I don't care. But yeah, great characters. I think Chris would love that they included a female Yakuza wife in there, and she was working at a convenience store. And so they had, like, this little rivalry in the convenience store where he, like, you double scan this one and everybody's like, oh crap, something's gonna go down in here. But again, they just want to live normal, peaceful lives. Well, I don't think she wants to, but yeah, way too fun. Loved it to death. Now here's the thing, and I should have told Chris beforehand to do this, but if you're not going to watch this show for anything, watch it for Kendro Suda to sing happy birthday in Tatsu voice. It was absolutely incredible. This happy birthday to you. like this intimidating Yakuza guy singing happy birthday for his wife. It was priceless. And the Roomba scene is easily goes down in like my favorite moment in anime history. Him, this gangster yelling at a Roomba, telling the Roomba that he gets like this territory to work in and that he's not doing his job right.
That's beating a whole bunch of very, very unique moments. The box put it in the box, put the box in the river and let it go down the stream. You got to beat that. You've got to beat sea base. You got to beat pickles and ice cream.
Is that like third base? And Prager ribbon.
And pick. Well, okay, yeah, that too. I wasn't thinking ribbon. About that. I was thinking about pickles and ice cream. Good job, yeah, Tenchi.
Pickles and ice cream? Could it be? No, it was funny because the other day my brother made a character and named it Washu, so he made a macro that says, "Hooray for Washu, 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 you're the one." And we have a parrot that keeps repeating it. Anyways, that's a side thought, discussion. But no, it's frustrating. But like I said, there's just so many golden moments in there. It's hard to really ignore it. So, yeah. Disposing of the body and everyone makes mistakes moment. Like playing out like it's like, you know, whenever an underling messes up and kills somebody and they have to cover it up and it's like, you know, it's okay, I'm gonna take care of you kind of thing. So good. Kenjiro Suda is so good. He's my man crush. I love him to death, and I am saddened that this got the adaptation that it did. But and I think they said there's gonna be more, so I don't know. It'll probably be done the same exact way, hopefully not, but like I said, not that it needs to be crazy animation, just don't do the sliding stills and stuff like that. Just do a little bit of effort. Make something move, or just don't show it at all. The Way of the House Husband, I absolutely love it. It is amazing. Hate the animation. That's all. Moving on. Moving on. The Hidden Dungeon, Only I Can Enter. Oore Dake Haireru Kakushi Dungeon. Kosori Kitate Sekai Saikyo. This one's streamed on Crunchyroll. Crunimation. It's going to be Crunimation eventually. Ran for 12 episodes. Done by Studio Okuruto Noboru. The source is a light novel. The genres are action, adventure, harem, ecchi, fantasy. And I don't want to say good, Olivia. This one follows a guy named Noir Stardia. And his family is a part of a kind of, not really nobles, but kind of acknowledged group of family. Very poor. Doesn't really get much given to them. And at some point, Noir is found to have a special ability which allows him to tap into the Great Sage, who will basically answer any question for him. And one question he basically has is he needs to, you know, a place that he can get stronger, essentially. Which leads him to the hidden dungeon. And he's given the password to enter this hidden dungeon. You know, hence the idea of the hidden dungeon, all I can enter. And he enters this dungeon and shortly later finds a chained up woman named Olivia Servant. And Olivia, even though she's chained up in these death chains, she's unable to move. He can't release her, otherwise she'll die. She bestows upon him her power, which is the power to essentially edit things, change things, create things, and it all kind of expends this LP, or I think you call it life points. And this LP, essentially, he can only regenerate it by either gaining large amounts of wealth, seeing something ecchi, or what was the other one? It was getting wealth.
Food. Good
doing
food.
Perverted thing. Oh, yeah, food. That was right. The food. I never really did much of the food thing.
Yeah,
it's just mostly ecchi and then some money things.
It pretty much revolves around living life. In living life to the fullest, yeah. That gives you life points.
Right. So yeah, he expends this points. He gains it by doing those things, expends it by, again, creating skills, editing skills, which in this world, even though it is a fantasy setting, it's not a video game. It technically has those kind of trappings of skills and stuff, and he's able to see them because he has a skill to kind of see, you know, people's abilities and his own, and he's able to then edit that point, make himself stronger, or use it to affect other people to defeat them. And that becomes this kind of thing as he's building his harem of girls to replenish his LP, helping them with his skill and eventually hoping to release his teacher, his Shisho, Olivia, from this hidden dungeon.
So, yeah. They even made fun of the fact that he was basically making fun of the fact that he was Lucky Letcher by saying, "How can I gain more life or LP faster?" And they said, "Give yourself the Lucky Letcher ability." And he's like, "Okay." And he does that, and then he turns around and like knocks it down a notch or two because it was too high for him.
Yeah, worst decision ever. And then they never play with the joke again after that. It's like, no, they don't. It's like it just got to get swept under the rug. Like, that was a funny joke. Let's get that out of the way.
This show is absolutely too goofy. I mean, at the end of the show, I turned around and they were doing one of the final scenes where it was like one of those artwork pictures, and I was like, I glanced at it and I'm like, holy crap, does he have that many? And I went through and I counted. Yeah. I mean, just off the top, off of here, I see 9 that are technically could be counted in his harem. And I think that there was still at least what, 2 more, because there was the Duchess or whatever. She was technically in the harem too, wasn't she?
The one
that they took the curse away from her, and she started turning into a.
That's
she
Maria.
Was in love with him too, huh?
That's Maria Albert.
Oh, okay, there she is.
I think the only one that's not in here would be probably the rival of Lola. That would be the only other one that I don't think was in here, in this outline anyway.
Yeah. She. I guess you could count her too, but she was just wanting every man, so whatever. But yeah,
technically just them as a harem member. And Tigerson's definitely a harem member.
Yeah, I was thinking about Tigerson. Yeah, he did end up technically blushing here and there too, but that one was a goofy scene. I sent a picture
what,
of
what, something wrong with the flower? What's wrong? Are you what? Something wrong with the flower?
I sent a picture to Andrew. I said, this picture is totally not out of context.
Well,
what he's doing.
Yeah, and that's like one major aspect of this show as a harem show is like they don't really. It's not like it's a, you know, a crazy ecchi where it's kind of borderline, you know, hentai porno. But it's like it's not hiding really much, and it's fully. It's like, wow, they're just kissing left and right. They're just like Frenching every 2 seconds and. That's, like, extremely not allowed in anime. And then yeah, suddenly out of nowhere, she's, yeah, playing with the flower. And I'm like, wow, they're just really kind of doing that straight up. They're not really hiding that at all, are they?
Nope. I actually got quite the kick out of that. And I was like, I just have to share this with Andrew. I wasn't sure if he was going to end up watching it or not. And I was like, no, you have to see this. It's such a just a goofy, fun show, and there's lots of fun to be had in here. If you like harems, you're gonna love this one. It is just all there, and they have fun with it.
Yeah, and it's crazy because this show oftentimes was kind of meh. Like, it wasn't really doing much for me, but it had some really solid, ecchi comedy moments that, you know, really did catch me off guard. Like I said, just the aspect of Tiger-san and Alice messing with Tiger-san's flower, it's like, those moments, like I said, are like shocking, whoa, I can't believe they went there kind of moments that I really did enjoy, and there was a lot of those moments that were in the show. I would say that I did enjoy the first half a lot more than the second half, because I did really enjoy Olivia. Olivia is kind of just a pure gold gem of this show. Like, whenever he goes to visit her or she's talking at him, she is an absolute joy. I just loved her comedy, her teasing, Noir, all that kind of stuff was fantastic. And like I said, just having that, I guess technically changed, it seemed like it kind of changed him a little bit, because he does get really, really bold. He is not a Ditherer main protagonist. Now, granted, he does, and it is a little bit confusing. He does every now and then kind of have those moments where he kind of suddenly goes, oh no, this is happening, and what do I do? But for the most part, whenever he, like, wants something, he goes for it. And, you know, these girls are, like, totally into it. And having a show where you have, you know, essentially a harem where they're not doing the whole usual blush, I can't do that thing, is kind of refreshing. It is a goofy harem ecchi comedy where it seems like everybody's into it. And it does lead into some funny moments. So, like, I wrote down here, the funny line that you start hearing a lot towards the later part is, oh, Noir must need more LP. Well, let me help you. And then runs over there and starts rubbing on him or kissing him. And it's like, yeah, they're all into it. Like, this is just, there's no issues here. Let's just have some goofy, etchy harem fun, and nobody's really in trouble here. So that did lead to some really funny moments. And like I said, I guess my struggle really is it is a lot of basic ecchi harem comedy stuff, minus the fact that, again, they're not really shying away from stuff, and these characters aren't a bunch of ditherers. They want what they want, and they get it. But the writing itself isn't really clever unless it's, like I said, it involves Olivia. And like I said, that's where I think a lot of the really good comedy writing comes into play for me, so...
I wish that they were a little bit more, they tried a little bit harder with the mechanic. The main mechanic is probably the thing that they could have done so much more with it. And the ecchi thing is fun, and I like the fact that they didn't hold back on the ecchi side. But the mechanic was kind of the thing that kind of keeps things moving. And at the point that they're at right now, it's like, it'll be interesting to see if they do any more with it. But I don't hold out a lot of hope, because what could they do from this point on? There's not much left.
Yeah, and I think that was probably the aspect of why the first part of it really did enjoy a lot more than the second part, because I did like that mechanic introducing it and the goofy stuff that he did with it. Like, yeah, changing the size of Emma.
Yeah.
That stuff was gold, and I do agree with you. It seems like really quickly after a while, it just becomes kind of a side note every now and then. Oh, yeah, I just have to do this, and it'll fix the issue. Now, granted, early on, they did kind of give a sense of, you know, he can't fix everything with it just because of the cost of it, which could end up killing him. It always kind of turned into a thing of, well, if I just kind of do this instead, it'll do it. And that stuff kind of, again, like you said, it kind of just goes to the wayside, and they don't really, they still use it. It is his main ability. He sucks otherwise. Mm-hmm. But it becomes kind of a thing of, it's not cleverly used, and it does seem underutilized, and it could be something that they could do a lot of fun stuff with, but again, they just kind of stop. They don't really, they use it, just not cleverly, like, you know, having ecchi, goofy fun with it by changing the size of somebody. So yeah, I do agree with you, and I think
that is probably why.
Yeah, yeah. They could have done some insane stuff with it, but they just, yeah, it's almost as if it, again, it has that syndrome of, you have these fun ideas with it, and you're like, okay, did you use them up? Did you use up all your good ideas, and now it's just a goofy, ecchi harem comedy? Yeah. It's decent other than that, if you're looking for... And I unfortunately, I don't think the ecchi is too strong. Like, granted, like I said, I mentioned the idea that I'm being pretty open with, you know, Frenching in the middle of nowhere and stuff like that. Like, there was a ballroom scene, and suddenly out of nowhere they're just kissing. I'm like, whoa, okay. You don't usually do that kind of stuff in anime, so it's kind of shocking, but it's not bad. But yeah, I'm gonna chop it up to probably because this is the TV version, and when it comes time for the Blu-ray, they'll show a lot more. It's probably the syndrome of cut scenes where it in the TV version, it's, you know, the skirt is covering it, but when it's a Blu-ray version, it'll show everything. But yeah, it did seem like the ecchi was pretty, played pretty safe, unfortunately. So, yeah, that's the hidden dungeon only I can enter. Check that out if you're looking for goofy fun. High-Rise Invasion is our next one, or Tenku Shinpan. This one streamed on Netflix, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Zero G. The source is a manga. The genres are action, mystery, horror, and ecchi. And this one follows a girl named Yuri. And as the show opens up, she wakes up on a rooftop of a skyscraper. And every exit to get out of the skyscraper, like all the staircases and elevators, are all blocked up. She cannot escape there. The only way that she can get around is there's these suspension bridges that are attaching each of the skyscraper's roofs. And so she can get around to different roofs that way. And she quickly gets a hold of her brother on the phone, and come to find out, he is also on one of these roofs, and they apparently have all been transported to this kind of setting of these bridges across these skyscrapers, and they can't get a hold of anybody else, and they are all being chased by these masked killers. Well, it seems like they're killers at first, but as they kind of laid out early on, they're trying to drive people to madness to the point where they will jump off of the skyscrapers. And that seems to be like the driving force of these masked killers, is just to beat people and terrify them to the point where they just want to give up and jump off. Of course, it doesn't really stick to that very long, but that's the premise early on. And so Yuri is trying to find her brother on these skyscrapers, trying to figure out who she can trust or who she can't trust, because it seems like there's a competition to find these extraction points of these helicopters, and only one person can get in them, so that kind of turns people against each other, and again, all these masked people are chasing them. So yeah, this show really is the kind of definition of turn off your brain and just enjoy the stupid fun. It is a violent action series that it's just, you don't take serious, and you just sit down and watch it to see stupid violence, really is all it is. And I was quickly reminded that at some point when I seen one girl, she like, it's a very gruesome death. This girl like just gets beheaded, and I'm like, holy crap, that was extremely violent. And then I'm reminded really quickly after that when the killers start doing like a synchronized dance routine on top of her corpse, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, this isn't supposed to be taken serious. This is a stupid violent comedy, basically. And that's kind of the feel of the entire show itself, is just violent stuff, some ecchi thrown in there, and just survival. The kind of interesting thing, and kind of the unfortunate thing at the same time, is that even though it kind of opens up this premise of almost a survival type setting with these masked guys chasing them, driving them to jump off the buildings, you can say that it's evolving, but it seems like everything the writer kind of creates for this setting just constantly changes every episode, it seems. Like, yeah, like I said, you have this setting, this premise, the idea of the masked people trying to drive people to jump off the buildings. And then that quickly turns into, well, if they don't jump off the buildings, they kill them anyway. And then it turns into, oh, yeah, by the way, some of these masked people can talk and they have their senses. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you can wear one of these masks. And it just kind of keeps shifting so quickly that the rules that it's trying to establish are never, ever put into concrete. And that kind of makes it to where you just really have no foundation to stand on. It just seems like whatever the writer wants to throw into the mix happens. So I can't really gather, okay, well, if that's the situation, then hopefully they can do this to remedy. Nope, it's not that. Oh, okay, well, we're going to do this instead. And so it does kind of feel jumbled in the idea that it never really kind of establishes a norm for this series. It's, yeah, you can say it's constantly evolving, but it's also kind of losing any kind of stability that you want to kind of grab onto. Even the sense of, like, death survival just gets thrown to the wayside really quickly. And I thought that was going to be the idea of this show, is, oh, crap, Yuri's got to survive, and this is a really dire situation. No, it just kind of turns into, yeah, at some point, pretty much a battle royale thing, which is like, okay, now we're doing this thing. Again, we can't keep to one idea for very long. So yeah, other than that, it's unfortunately also, since it is like a crazy romp, action, violence type show, the the action itself isn't all that clever, and that's kind of an unfortunate thing. There's a good couple moments in the series where they do some clever stuff with the action, but not really too much. I liked Mayuko Nisei. The stuff that they did with her was really cool, I'll admit. Kuon and Sniper Mask, I did kind of enjoy those characters. Most of the scenes that they were in, I was actually kind of more into the ideas of the world itself, and that's really what they were kind of presenting. So I did kind of like their characters. A lot of the stuff they were getting into in the later parts with the kind of god selection stuff, which I won't get too much in detail because of spoilers, that stuff is interesting, but unfortunately, that kind of leads me into the biggest issue, which is that this isn't finished, and it doesn't feel like a chapter close, really, at all. So keep that in mind. It might be something that, if they do announce a second season, I can suggest at that point. But as it stands now, it's hard to suggest just because of how unfinished this feels. So, yeah, that's kind of where I leave on it. The ecchi isn't that solid. It is kind of the ecchi that is, you know, it just happens. It's not really trying to go for it, but, you know, miniskirts in an action show, it kind of happens, and that's where they're kind of going with that. Yeah, overall, decent if you're just looking to just enjoy a doofy, violent action show, but unfortunately don't really look for a conclusion or, you know, really clever action scenes. So, yeah. That's High-Rise Invasion. That's my thoughts on it. Again, check that out if that sounds interesting to you. And hopefully we'll get a second season for it. But I don't know. I don't know if this will be one of Netflix's most successful shows, but we'll see. I know that it had some calling for it from people, so maybe the fandom will drive it to get a second season. Log Horizon Destruction of the Round Table, or Log Horizon Intaku Hokai. This one streamed on Funimation around for 12 episodes, done by Studio Deen. The source is a light novel, and the genres are action, game, adventure, magic, fantasy. And this is the third season of Log Horizon, question mark?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a two-core, and then this, which is a 12-episode.
So what's your thoughts on Destruction of the Round Table? How was that destruction?
It was that title is a little bit misleading, but it is what happens per se. If you know what I'm talking about, you know exactly what we're discussing. Actually, Andrew would know. You would actually technically know what that means, but
probably not.
More out of memory. When you go to rewatch this, you'll know exactly what this is. The goofy thing about this is, now that I have literally caught up with everything, I have gotten through everything, I know what this is about and watched it. I was talking to Andrew the other day, and my biggest frustration with Log Horizon. Okay, I really, really love Log Horizon because there's so much really cool stuff. It's constantly going on about different things, and I keep bringing those goofy things up with Andrew. It's like, ooh, Andrew, think about this. This is something that they've got going on here. And then and there's like several more cool little things that they bring up. Here's my frustration. That really cool thing is also my biggest frustration with this show, or this story, show, whatever you want to call it. They never do anything with them. I tossed a bone out at Andrew because farther into the second season, they bring up something that's really cool: Chinese bots. If a normal person can get stuck in this world, why can't a Chinese bot get stuck in this world? They've never touched it. They have not talked about it since then. Now, that does not mean that it won't get discussed later on in the story at some point. My point is that they have not discussed it. They don't discuss it ever again. It's brought up and never discussed. There's a couple of other things that are brought up and never talked about again. And it's really, really frustrating. But that aside, new stuff that was it's continuing on with the storyline as of the stuff that was already kind of brought in. The people of the land are becoming more and more prominent as a thing. I do get a kick out of some of the almost like dropping tidbits as to the nature of the people of the land. And I'm getting very, very curious about that, those little things. But it's almost like they're hinting at it, and they're – but it's not – but think of it along the lines of it's a clue that might be – that might reveal the true nature of the people of the land, but it's not so – such a prominent thing that – if you weren't actually flat out looking for it, you wouldn't notice it. And I'm wondering if it's because of that thing that maybe just because I've watched so many shows, I've started to notice that. And it's like, should I take this into consideration? There's so many weird things that are going on with the people of the land, and I think that's the thing that this writer is getting really, really stuck on and focusing on a lot, is that these are going to be the trick behind this entire world. So it's fascinating, and there's other things that are really cool that I wish would be taken more serious, but instead we get stuck in kind of interpersonal things, which is not a bad thing. I really do like the characters, and I really love the characters. We got kind of a bookend to certain relationships. I'm not going to go into deep in that. It was disappointing in some ways, and in other ways, it is kind of nice to have a resolution to that. And now certain relationships can be more focused and more solid. Love it. Can't wait to see more. It's a great show, and I can only recommend it, especially if you can ignore some of those really annoying things that keep getting left out in the open.
All right. Log Horizon, Destruction of the Round Table. A praising review by Chris. The next one we have is Azurlane Bizoku Zenshin, or Azurlane Bizoku Shinshin, the Japanese title. This was on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, a short series done by studio Yostar Pictures and Candy Box. And the source is a 4-comma manga, obviously based off of the Azurlane mobile game and animated series they did later on. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on this series?
I really need to go and play this game and get to know these characters more. I really, really love these characters, and I like their artworks, and it just makes me wish that I had taken the game a lot more serious as all this does.
Yeah, I just really feel it was like a Ken Colley knockoff, and so I didn't really give it much of attention, but it is a series that a game that a lot of people did enjoy. So
yeah, getting the characters, I mean, the jokes were fun and cute and goofy, and that's really a lot of it, was just these characters being cutesy and fun. And like I said, all it did was made me want to go and play the game more.
That's Azurlane Bizoku Zenshin. Check that out if that sounds interesting to you.
It did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, Horimiya is our next one. This one is streaming on Funimation, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Cloverworks. The source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life, comedy, romance, school, and shonen. And this one was directed by Masashi Ishihama, who did From the New World, Garokawa, and Speed Grapher. Series composition by Takayo Yoshioka, who did Elfin Lead, High School DxD, Konohana Katan, Working Familiar of Zero. And yeah, this one follows a... essentially early on follows a girl named Kyoko Hori, And Kyoko Hori, who is kind of doing her normal daily routine, she's going to school. She's pretty popular in school, but unfortunately goes quickly home as she, at home, is mostly taking care of her little brother, Sota. And at some point, Sota shows up at her doorstep with a guy in tow, Izumi Miyamura, who is kind of looks like a punk. He's got his hair tied back. He's got a bunch of piercings. And she's like, okay, thanks for bringing my brother home. And he's like, okay, wait, you don't know who I am? And she's like, no, I don't know who you are. He's like, I'm Izumi from your class. And then she realizes this is the guy that's at her class that is kind of, you know, not really socializing with anybody, is kind of to himself in the corner, has really long hair that covers his face. And now and before him is this kind of, you know, I guess more attractive punk, dangerous boy that is him when he's not in school. So, and what this kind of turns into is her basically, even though her little brother is now kind of like inviting Izumi to come over and play, over time, she kind of keeps making excuses to keep him to coming over so that she can kind of learn more about him. And so the two of them, you know, through these encounters outside of school, are kind of learning more about each other. How, you know, Izumi is, you know, has this other side to him. Where he's at school, he's very closed off from people. Outside of school, he has this almost dangerous side to him, what it seems like anyways. And then Izumi is able to see kind of this more, you know, laid-back version of Kyoko Hori, this hard-working version of Hori that's not, you know, done up and pretty for school. She's at home more comfortable and doing chores and helping her little brother and everything. And then that kind of relationship between the two of them slowly kind of is revealed at school itself when she's talking to him more and everybody's kind of wondering why, you know, who's this guy you're suddenly talking to, and learning more about him and his insecurities around other people. And then again, more about these people that he would normally see as unapproachable at school are kind of, you know, more down to earth than he thinks they are. And they have their own struggles and the different relationships that are blossoming around them as they're coming into their third and final years in school. So your thoughts on Hori Miya?
Kenjiro Suda? Who's that?
Huh?
Kenjiro Soda disappears. Who's that?
I'm glad that you noticed that because I probably would have missed it. It's so funny. This show opens up with Kenjiro Suda, who is the teacher, making fun of, I think he was making fun of Hori, saying that she's unattractive or something like that. And it has like this whole opening about him being a teacher because, you know, high school girls and stuff. And then suddenly that's like the last time you hear him until like the very end of the show, suddenly out of nowhere. I'm like, oh, that's right. Kenjiro Suda's in this show. He's the teacher. And suddenly he's at the graduation. And it's like, why did they introduce the show like that? It's so weird. Like like I said, they they open it up with the narration of Kenjiro Suda as the teacher, essentially, you know, talking inappropriately about his students. And then suddenly he's just gone for the rest of the show because obviously he, I don't know, did something else. I don't know. I just found that was funny.
You noticed something that I didn't. So,
I cannot not hear and notice my man crush Kenjiro Suda. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I probably would have caught it, but I probably caught his voice, but I didn't really think about the fact that he wasn't there the entire show. So, this show is absolutely fantastic. From the kind of rom-com thing that they got going on through this show, there was so many times when after the initial kind of introduction to everybody, and you kind of get the feel and the vibe of how this show kind of pushes forward its comedy, it hits, and it hits hard. I absolutely love Hori kind of pushing Miyamura into kind of more this more dominant type character, and it's just too much fun to have other characters like, you shouldn't be with her, and he's like, can you do this? And he's like, no. Oh yeah, well watch this. And he's it's just absurd, and I love the humor of this show through and through. I do kind of like the the more soft-hearted attention to detail of this. It's kind of toying with the whole mask thing, just like bottom tier character did. It does it in a different way. It's this: I want to keep your hidden side just for myself, and that's kind of Hori's thing with Miyamura, and Miyamura's thing with Hori, and a couple of the other characters end up doing that thing as well. Of this kind of. You can have, everybody else can have this version of you, but I get to keep this other version to myself because that's mine. And I do like that, that they play that kind of feel through the entire story, because it is introducing a different side of these characters that you're not going to see in their kind of quote unquote school life, side of themselves.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I enjoyed the most about the series was that. Okay, let me step back. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is a romance anime. It is a romance anime. That's all I can say. Like, I have a hard time liking romance anime. I just don't. Either they are way too melodramatic. Nobody communicates, and everything is done up just for crazy high tension dramatic moments. And this one didn't have that. This one felt so natural. It felt like people were communicating. It felt like it had that. Well, that was moments where they weren't communicating, but that's just jealousy moments and inability to express yourself the way that you want to. But I love this show so much for being a solid romance show that I love to death. And can actually say this is one of my favorite romance shows of all time for anime. Just because, like I said, it didn't get stuck in melodramatic moments. It had moments where things were, you know, people were questioning each other or they had issues with how somebody was acting, but it resolved them quickly. It didn't let them stagnate for 3 episodes just to have some stupid, overly dramatic, emotional fix to it at the end. It's like the writer was not trying to play off of the dramatic beats too much and killing the tension itself with, you know, dragging it out. So yeah, loved it. Like I said, the romance felt natural, even though, yeah, with a lot of love blossoming with a lot of characters, there's going to be a lot of triangles, and obviously with triangles, one tip has to be broken and saddened and cry, but I loved every little kind of romantic build that they had for a lot of these characters, the interest that they have, the struggles that they have with each of their own ways of expressing their love. Love it to death. It looked great. I think CloverWorks did fantastic on this. This is easily 2 of 3 of their shows this season being absolutely fantastic in that regard. They did a great job with it. The visual style was very interesting, very unique, and all the great moments that were kind of enhanced by some really fantastic animation. I loved all the characters. I think they were absolutely fantastic. I think save for one character, and that was Honoka, unfortunately. Besides Honoka, I loved all the characters. My problem with Honoka is she didn't feel like she fit the show at all. Like, no, she felt didn't. Like she was, she really felt like she was flat out of some goofy rom-com shenanigans, very anime type show, whereas the rest of the characters felt more natural. They felt believable. Honoka didn't. She just felt like she was just kind of thrown in there just to make Miyamura feel jealous, I guess.
I'm assuming that there's going to be a point to her later on, because that she just, like Andrew was saying, she just felt completely shoehorned in. It was like, where is this character coming from? What is her point? And even a little bit later,
they're
going
to be like, oh, by the way, actually, she is your little sister. I'm like, oh, please don't do that. Please don't do that.
Yeah, it didn't.
Because she looked like him. She had the same eyes, same hair color. Everything was very similar. I'm like, please don't do that.
Yeah, she absolutely felt like she didn't fit in any way, shape, or form. What was the point in her? I like I said, the only thing I could figure is that she's something that is probably addressed later at some point, and it would probably make perfect sense, because I actually kind of thought that they were siblings at one point.
And it's sad because she kind of technically points out my only flaw that I have for the show. Like, I literally only have this one flaw of this show. And it's that the pacing feels weird at times. Like, out of nowhere, they'll have, like, an emotional point, and then it scene changes, and it seems like it goes completely different direction with a completely different mood. And sometimes it feels like they progress from scene to scene so breakneck that it breaks, like, the feel of the show. Like, you'll have a character's having an issue, scene change, issue resolved. And, like, it almost feels like there's, like, these segments of storytelling that are being cut out, and it's just jumping forward to get something done. And that is also in part with some of the episodes felt very skit-based. It almost felt like you went from a full manga to almost like a four comma manga, where it's very kind of, okay, scene change, quick joke, scene change, quick joke, scene change, quick joke. Some of the episodes felt like they were just completely devoted to that kind of storytelling, or not really storytelling, but comedy sketches. And then the next episode, we'll go back to, okay, now we're going to get into this character and how they're in love with this other character. Not that that part specifically is a bad thing, but it is the only flaw that I could probably say that this show has, besides Hanukkah not feeling like she fits in the show. Not that the Hanukkah ruins it in any way, just that Hanukkah doesn't feel like she fits. There's nothing wrong with her as a character. It doesn't break the show. It's just that she doesn't fit. But yeah, other than her, I loved all of these characters. They were so fantastic. I loved getting into Izumi and his insecurities, breaking out of his shell. I love that later on they kind of get into what could have been for him. And the way that they did that was really well done. Hori is fantastic. She's an absolute goofball. She's a hard worker. I love getting both of their other side. Like you mentioned, that technically that face behind the mask that they both find between each other, and how natural their love kind of progresses over time. They eventually realize they really need each other, and that's how their love blossoms. It's not, you know, saving from a car wreck. It's not heavy melodramatic stuff. It feels natural, and their love kind of blossoms, and I really did like that. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the the Dom stuff that they get into later on, but hey, that's your thing. Go for it. I don't particularly like it. It hurts to see. But that's just me. Toru's great. Again, Toru and Yuki are kind of in the same boat. They have that aspect of unrequited love and possible heartbreak. I did really love Yuki. I thought that she was absolutely adorable, and I didn't want her heart to be broken. I love that she was...
I think that they did really well with that, because I was pulling for both of them. I really liked both of those characters, and that I thought was pretty rough.
Yeah, Yuki was great just because she has that aspect to her where she realized what she's doing is wrong, and she technically does confront that and that willingness to do that, even though she thinks that she's not strong. Just her overall story is the aspect of, you know, not going after what she wants. She literally is the childhood friend syndrome, technically. Not to say that she's a childhood friend of any character and playing that story, but she is that aspect of the not saying what you want until it's gone, which I thought was really well done. And like I said, she's absolutely adorable. Rem and Kakeru were great as well. I'm a little bit confused by Remy, because it played it out as if she was dead set on somebody later on. But then, for some reason, that is kind of counter to what she was doing earlier. But maybe I missed something there. I don't know if you got that as well. Was she playing with Hori to push her? Because it seemed like the way that she was saying it in that scene that she was dead set on having Miyamura. Or was that a different character and I'm just completely mistaken?
I don't know. I think that I almost seem to remember a hint of something like that, But it was probably just to push Hori into doing something.
Right. Because, so, well, my thought process was early on, I thought that she had fell in love with Miyamura. And that she was like, oh, well, I'm going to have him, all right? And she's like, no, you can't have him. And it, like I said, it, I don't remember it feeling like her pushing Hori. And then later on, when it gets into Remy's backstory, I'm like, no, she's dead set on Sengoku. She's dead set on Sengoku. She's always been dead set on Sengoku. So why would she have even teased the idea of going after Miyamura? Okay, well, maybe she was trying to push Hori, but I don't remember that having that feel in that scene. That's what's struggling for me.
Yeah, because she's never she never really kind of so much revealed that she was with Sengoku. It's one of those goofy things. It's like I just seen her as kind of the she was a, well, more of a busybody than any,
she was.
She's a busybody type character is the way she came off to me, and she would throw herself around just to get people to do things like more. She's more calculating than she gives off the impression of, because she comes off of as this airhead that doesn't know anything, but in all actuality she actually is very calculating in what she's doing. But that's the way she came off to me.
Well, that was the great thing about her, is that she was actually very kind-hearted. I mean, the scenes with her and Kono Sakura were like just pure gold. Like, she was a total sweetheart to her. I mean, it was the same thing that she was dealing with Yuki. She could have easily been outraged against Yuki, but she's like, no, that's what you, if you tell me that you like him, I won't say anything. Because she understands that she was struggling. That she is technically the most misunderstood character of the show itself. Because you think that she's a, like you said, a busybody or a just an absolute jerk. But no, she's actually very, understands people.
She's very calculating. And that's, that I think is what makes her probably one of the most interesting characters out of this entire group. Like you were saying, where it was, she actually going after Miyamura, or was she just pushing Hori? I think she was probably pushing Hori. I think she did the same thing with Yuki and what was going on with that triangle. I think that she was a lot more calculating than she gave off. And she was another one of those characters who I like your hidden side that only I get to see with Sengoku. I mean, this show had masks and hidden sides all through it.
Yeah, I'm watching it right now. You can definitely see it as her pushing her. It just, like I said, at the time, you could probably chop it up to the fact that it didn't seem like we didn't really establish. They did technically introduce Remy saying that she was Sengoku's boyfriend or girlfriend, and that she was just there because of that. But I guess it really didn't establish like how sold she was on Sengoku. So the assumption could be there that, she's just changing jobs, basically. She's switching men really, really quickly, but the way that she kind of words it is that, hey, do you like Miyamura? And then she's like, oh, well, no. And the way that, you know, she sees Hori react, she could have easily been playing her to push her forward. So I guess that's the case there. That was a crazy tangent. But it technically reveals how much these characters were so complex and how good the writer was in introducing and putting. Now, granted, you can chop a lot of this show up to be a rom-com, but I think the drama beats and the romance that are in there that are sprinkled throughout there are really fantastic. And I think it is driven by just really solid characters that all have, you know, maybe not complex flaws within them, but their flaws are enough that it drives them in one direction or another. And the way that each characters respond to each other, you know, either in some cases pushing, but most of the cases pulling, because it seems like over time as the show progresses, the effects of Izumi Miyamura being a part of their group really does change them. And it technically, again, hits on that later on, where it kind of gives the idea of the what could have been, is the effect of almost everybody kind of coming together and the bonds that they create through love and relationships that they are forming throughout the school year. So Absolutely loved it. Akane Yanagi was absolutely hilarious. He's running in the doors. And Yuki thinks that he misidentified her, and he's like, no, you are. And he starts talking to a statue. it was great. I loved it so much. It's kind of like, I guess a good way to put it, it's like a combination of really solid romance with like an almost Tsurizuri children kind of vibe to it. Like that really cute, wholesome romance comedy that's kind of sprinkled throughout it. And like I said, having dramatic beats in it, but not being overplayed and resolving them quickly. Like, you know, people don't, you know, stew on this stuff that long when they're with each other all the time. So having all that stuff kind of get resolved, the drama beats not being too heavy, the romance being very natural and feel very natural, it's going to go down as probably one of my favorite romance comedies or romance altogether shows of all time. So really did love it. Love all the characters. I guess the other flaw is that Kenjo Suda was not in it enough. Mm-hmm. So she was great too. Like the personality that he is at school, the personality is that at home. And the one time that she shows up. Oh, that was great. I wasn't sure what they were going to do with that, but that was great. Yeah, I guess my only other, like, characters that, besides Honoka, Makio was a little bit weird, too. Because they played him out like he was a total jerk when he first shows up, and then it kind of turns into a, oh, I just never noticed him. I actually wanted to be his friend. I'm like, what the hell? You were literally putting him down in front of his girlfriend before, and now you're like, oh, it was just a misunderstanding. That was a little weird,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the friends... Although their joke at the beginning was kind of funny, I was a little bit confused as to what they were doing with that. But then, this is a show that a lot of the stories centered around masks, so it could have totally worked, I guess.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with the mask thing, but yeah, I don't know. It is definitely a fantastic show, and definitely should check it out. It is Horimiya, a great series. Definitely going to be a favorite for me, for sure. So yeah, Show by Rock is our next one. Show by Rock Stars. This one's streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes. Studio is Kinema Citrus. The source is a Vigio game. And of course, this is like the, what, fourth iteration fifth? Of the fourth Show by Rock fifth. Series?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've had a series for the original Show by Rock. They had a sequel for Show by Rock. Then they had Mashiro Mai Reshu. And I think they did a short series with the Sharingan guys, and then now we're bringing them all together for Show by Rock Stars, a kind of culmination of all the characters together. So I unfortunately did not get back to this one, but this will be one that I'll eventually get back to because I love these girls and I just didn't have the time to. So your thoughts on it?
I'm actually surprised how well they balanced each of the kind of groups in this one. This was more focused on Mashiro Mai Reshu. But like I said, they kind of balanced it fairly well with Plasmagica and the boys. Of course, the boys had to be brought in.
The boys.
Now, here's the funny thing. If I was to say any group kind of got left out to the side, it would probably be Shingon Crimson. But they kind of jumped in with Dokkenjo Finger here and there. I did kind of come away liking Dokkenjo Finger a lot more than I thought I would. They were the group that I kind of disliked the most out of all four of these groups. However, when I finally got to hear an actual, I'm trying to remember back in, the first time Mashiro Mai Reshu, had its, series, if Dokkenjo Finger even had a song in that one. But for sure it was in this one and I did really like that song. So I'm kind of now a little bit more stuck on Dokkenjo Finger where I still am mixed on what, because I don't like their characters. I really don't. I do get a kick out of a couple of them.
You don't like the bee guy that for some reason sounds like he's saying the F word every time he says something? It sounds like he's saying the F word.
That group is one group that outside of the Phoenix-ish character, like I said, when I finally got the joke of what he was, before then I was like, okay, just dude that keeps coughing up blood for whatever reason. And each one of them has their own thing. Yes, I get that. But I've never cared for this particular group. It doesn't work for me, but they actually can sing. So I'm like, oh, shoot. Now I have to give a notch for them. But other than that, like I said, they balanced the groups very well. Had a lot of fun. Getting some kind of more backstory on Delmin and Rihuyu was really great. And by the way, this is Stars, so all of the groups got dragged into this at some point, and you got a little bit of things from all of your old groups got dragged into this, and it was a lot of fun to see.
Did the Asian group back in there? I forget what the name of the Asian group was. The Asian group.
Yes, they had an entire... Yeah, they had pretty much an entire episode dedicated to them. Even brought in BVJ. So that was really great. So I was at towards the end of this series, I was absolute heaven watching all of my favorites come back. So yeah, it was great. Loved it.
Yep. That's Shoba Rock Stars. Check that out. I think I suggest the entire series altogether. Just too much fun. It was kind of surprised with the first season, and I've always enjoyed them. Just my cute little idol girls that I want to have succeed. And the doofy guys. It's so funny because the guys are always funny, and the idea that every time an episode would come up and you realize it's the guy episode, because they would just randomly throw in a guy episode. It was always like, oh no, I want to watch the cute girls. And it's like they always end up having like some goofy shenanigans that I have a lot of fun with. So yeah.
I still love the whole you're a guy with with a job, so you're the ultimate man. I just love it. I just love it whenever he says something and everybody all stands up and like, yeah, you're the man.
Oh, did they ever, I joked about it in our first impressions, but did they ever acknowledge the fact that she's a high schooler girl isekai'd into a mobile game with Cyan?
Yes, they actually did, I want to say.
They touched on it? Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was going to also toss in they were making more and more references to Retori and Himiko, as Himiko is Retori in this group.
Yeah.
It's so funny that they are so on the nose with it. Like, they're absolutely, oh, you're from another planet, and I come from an island out in the middle of nowhere. So it's like they keep making these references to just absolutely on the nose. They know full well they are using the same tropes over and over again between groups.
Yeah, I know. In the early episodes, they were kind of establishing that when they first kind of got together at the studio. They were all kind of going through each one of them, and you're going, "Yep, that was." They're acknowledging this stuff now, so they're pairing them up. Very obviously at this point. So. Yep. Moving on, we have Kimono Jaihin. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Aijai Do. The source is a manga, and the genres are action, mystery, demons, supernatural, and shonen. And this one starts out with a guy named Inugami, a detective that was going out into a rural area to investigate a bunch of bodies that were being found, and the kind of supernatural mysteries behind it. He kind of is somebody that a lot of these, you know, police officers and stuff will contact in order to investigate, you know, supernatural happenings and resolve them. Things that, you know, normal humans cannot figure out. Because in this world, you do have kimono that live alongside mankind in kind of secrecy. And so, like I said, Inugami, he is actually a tanuki. He will actually go out there as a human and work with the humans to figure out what the issue is and resolve it. And as he's at in this real location, he ends up running into a boy named Kabane. And Kabane is a half. We kind of find out later on that he is a half ghoul. He is a half hybrid type. They call him Hanyos. And Kabani is, it seems like he is actually at fault here, that he's the one that's causing this issue. And come to find out later on, Inagami was actually hired to come there and kill Kabane because they feared him, you know, losing control and killing people. And come to find out, Kabane is actually has possession of this kind of amulet that was obviously given to him by his parents, or at least that's what they're insinuating at this point. And this amulet has the ability to kind of suppress things. And so Inagami, yeah, he plays it out as if he's getting rid of Kabane, but he actually brings Kabane back to his offices back in Tokyo, where he hires him in to help him resolve these different issues that are happening around humankind to, you know, keep certain issues revolving around kimonos out of the human eyes and, you know, keep order instilled. So, yeah, well, later on, you meet Inari. Inari is obviously a Inari, you know, fox spirit. And she is obviously, as most kind of folktales are, pretty at odds with Inagami because, you know, the differences between the two of those, Tanukis versus Inari. And Inari is actually has pretty much control over the police departments because she's obviously using her kind of ability, her allure to control the humans. And so she kind of keeps a lot of the issues revolving around the kimonos out of the eyes of humankind using the police and all that kind of stuff to establish control there. And then, so like I said, Kabane is working along with Inagami. There's also Akira who works there as well, and Shiki who works there as well. And they all kind of work together to resolve kimono cases and, yeah, like I said, keep order with humankind and keep that balance in check. So, yep. This one was actually a surprise to me. I actually really did enjoy this series. I do really hope this ends up turning into a long-running series because I did enjoy the characters a lot. I think a lot of the interesting aspect comes into play in Kabane being a very unique main character, and the aspect that he is very isolated when he's at the rural town. They treat him like crap. They often just make him work the fields. He's mistreated by all the kids that are there. He just lacks a lot of emotion. But over time, as the show kind of goes along, he doesn't kind of lose that very, like, if there's a really serious situation, like, this guy could kill this person, they turn to Kabane and say, is that okay with you? Kabane's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Do you want me to do it instead? I mean, he has that kind of personality of a very lack of understanding of moral boundaries and the effects that it can have on people. But he still, over time, is establishing a desire to protect those that are around him. He's establishing this connection with Akari and Akira, Shiki and Inagami. He's establishing a family and things that he wants to protect, but he always has this kind of demeanor of really not understanding certain social norms and stuff like that, that most people would be like, no, you can't really do that. That's not right. So I think that does add a lot of flavor to the series overall. Inagami is a solid character, you know, very much so a big brother. This wants to protect his family, and even though he's still kind of working on the side. Akira is, I don't know, Akira was probably the one character I didn't like the most. Akira is this boy that is very feminine and doesn't really add much of the scenes besides just whining a lot. And that's my only problem with Akira overall. He just whines all the time and just kind of fits the bill of being the feminine one that doesn't really do much in each scene. But I did really like her backstory with her brother. All that stuff was really fantastic. I thought that was probably one of the best arcs of the series. So even though I didn't like his personality whining all the time and sticking on the sidelines, I did like his story overall. Shiki was fantastic as well. Very much so the loud and conflicting type of character, always kind of causing conflict with Kabane, even though Kabane doesn't really respond to much. Khan, unfortunately, was the biggest pain for me in this series. I loved Khan so much. She was so fantastic. They did great work on her. She's a Kitsune Fox as well. So she can transform into a wolf form. She can throw flame with her tail. She's like really cool. And the way that they animated her was fantastic. But for some reason, they like introduce her. They have like a short segment episode with her, and then she like disappears. And then she doesn't show up until like way later when they introduce a possible love interest to Kobane, and she suddenly randomly shows up, and she's like, just is almost. I sent a message to Chris like, wow, they like ignore the fact that Khan exists for several episodes, and then they just randomly have her show up the moment they want to establish that there's a love triangle happening. Like, oh, suddenly Kobane has a harem. Oh, let's have Khan finally show up. But I love her to death, and that's what sucks. I love her character design. I love her attitude. She's very kind of ditzy and doesn't really kind of realize when she's being wrong. She's very kind of innocent in that regard. But I just loved her character. And she's kind of similar to Kobane, where they're almost very kind of foreign the way they act. And Khan doesn't realize that she's being used. She doesn't realize, she kind of almost treats Kobane as like a master in some regard. And she's kind of one of those characters. I'm curious, based on how good the writing's been so far with each of the cases, I'm curious if they will end up doing something very interesting with her going forward. She's obviously still being used by Inari, but what that can end up turning into is intriguing to me. That's the thing with the series overall, is the writing has a very dark undertone with everything. Shiki's backstory and his mother, extremely dark. It's basically the idea of trying to utilize the kimono to create something that can help humans, and the dark kind of science and experimentation that happens there gets really dark. Getting into Akira and her brother and their backstory gets really dark. Kobane, I'm sure eventually when they get really into his backstory, his introduction was very dark. The cases that they do are all extremely dark. And so it's that willingness that the writer seems to have of getting pretty gritty with all these stories and what the characters do and how it affects them and how they react to situations that does have me very intrigued with what the story can do going forward. And that's what has me really wanting to have another season of this. And that's truly a sign that I'm kind of really getting invested in the series. And I'm really glad that I checked it out, because there's intrigue with everything the writer does. When Khan fails to get Kobane, Inari discards her and she immediately gets another tool. And that new tool obviously doesn't look like he is wanting to work with Inari. What will they do with that character? That's what I'm intrigued by. Again, with each of the characters and they got in the backstories, I was intrigued and I wanted to get into them. So what they've set up with the story overall, not extremely complex. It's essentially, okay, you have this amulet that Kobane has, or this talisman. What could that mean? Oh yeah, let's talk about how there's several of these talismans and they're special in some way for this overall world. That's obviously the shonen carrot on a stick that will probably drive them going forward. But how the characters are reacting to the situation now and these little stories are telling is what's intriguing, and I'm absolutely sold on this writer as it stands right now. So this is definitely my surprise of the season. Like I said before, my gem is technically Wonder Egg Priority. That was the greatest of this series so far. Obviously, you loved Mushoku Tensei, loved the returning shows. But this is the one that I did not see coming. This is the one that I literally was thinking, okay, this is just another shonen show. Let me turn it on. I literally seen one person commenting in a thread, I think it was Funimation made, was what's the show that doesn't have much attention that you think should? And somebody mentioned Kimono Jaihin. And that was that one person that said that. I'm like, let me get caught up on this one. As even though, like I said, I didn't get a chance to do Dr. Ramone, which I think is going to be a great series, and I don't really necessarily need to say that. It was working really well early on, and I mentioned that in First Impressions. I wanted to get back to Show by Rock. I wanted to get back to Other Side Picnic. But this was the one that I went, nobody's talking about this one. Let me try this one. And I'm really happy I did, because, like I said, the writer is very clever with his stuff. It seems like the characters act very inhuman, which is a good thing. They're kimonos. They're half kimonos. They act slightly different. And the way they react to things is what's intriguing, and what the writer is willing to do with the storytelling. I'm kind of excited about what can come in the future for it. So definitely my surprise of the season. And I am looking forward to, hopefully, I haven't seen anything on it yet. I'm hoping that we get another season of this. So yeah, that's Kimono Jaihin. Definitely check that out if that sounds interesting to you. And I'll make a video on it as well. I sometimes forget certain things, and maybe the video will have some extra tidbits that I'll get into. So yeah, Laidback Camp. Caesar, are you gonna check that one out? Are you gonna check out your Kimono Jaihin? Or maybe if it gets second season?
I don't know. It sounds a little bit interesting, but it is, you were mentioning it's dark, so we'll see. Maybe for sure if there's a second season. I just never got around to it because I was interested in it.
Yeah. And I guess something to note to help you out a little bit is granted, Shiki's backstory was I think probably the most roughest one that you would probably feel going through. But most of the dark stuff is not really involving the characters, and I know that that's something that does kind of enhance the difficulty of watching a lot of the more violent stuff. So, yep, Laidback Camp. Let's get into some happy stuff. Laidback Camp Season 2, or Yuru Camp Season 2. This one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio C Station. Sources of manga, genres are slice of life, comedy, and seinen. And for those who don't know what Laidback Camp is, or Yuru Camp is, it essentially follows a bunch of girls who basically are brought together through one thing specifically, which is camping. In the first season, we followed Nadeshko as she had just moved to a new town, joins a camping club, and starts getting into camping itself. A lot of it focus as well as to Rin. Rin is mostly a solo camper. She likes to go out on her moped and go out and explore locations and camp by herself. But they're all, like I said, all connected by one thing, and which is camping. And you kind of just join them as they go out, learn about camping, learn along with them, and enjoy the scenery and music and warmth that Laidback Camp has. So, and this season kind of more focused on a lot of backstory for Rin, how she first got into camping. We also did get Nadeshko going out for her solo camping event. And then we had a kind of a big group camping that they all did together. So, yeah, your thoughts?
Fantastic. I am biased. I've already really loved the first few seasons, so getting more of it, just further enjoyment. I did like the new kind of running around and actually exploring these geo spots that they were doing in this one in particular area. That was really neat. So you get a little bit of history behind the actual area in which they were exploring, except outside of just the, I guess it's a natural extension of getting these scenic views, which is what really kind of what the first season was, first couple of seasons were doing, was these scenic views of usually Mount Fuji, because they're obsessed with Mount Fuji.
Totally are. Fuji-san!
So it is kind of neat to see this. I did, they were also kind of doing some kind of almost seemed like they were advertising different, not necessarily tea spots, but just tea spots or different stores. So it seemed like they were kind of almost incorporating nice, not just tourist spots, but actual stores basically advertising those. So it seems like they're kind of more monetizing, for lack of a better term. I don't know that that's actually what they're doing. It just seems like that's something that kind of felt like was being brought into it as well. They were already very heavy into talking about different tools and stuff like that. And I'm not sure if Caribou is an actual brand or if that was just something that they were kind of a knockoff of a brand that's there, because in a lot of anime that ends up happening. It just, for lack of a better term, it seems like there was a lot more monetizing in this season. That being said, still great humor, great fun, lots of scenic stuff. Absolutely, I felt like the best joke of the entire season of all shows was in this particular show, and I don't want to spoil it. I've already spoiled it for Andrew, but it was great. I loved it.
Yeah, Caribou is a fictional outdoor goods chain stores that appears in Eurocamp anime. The featured stores are based on real stores, but some aspects are changed to be consistent within the anime.
Mm-hmm.
So, a parody.
There you go.
Yeah, I kind of echo the same sentiment that it is technically, in often cases, does feel like a advertisement for different locations, almost like a tourist, you know, real, like, oh, go to this fantastic location. Oh, don't forget to go to this fantastic location and check out this store. It has great noodles. It does have that. And I think that that is intentional, because in a lot of cases with like the shows like this, there's also a case with a lot of the biker shows, they'll often incorporate things that boost tourism to different locations. And I think that they are technically doing a little bit of that with Laidback Camp. The thing to note is that it doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like this is telling me, oh, don't forget to go by here because the tea is fantastic. It's just that the character goes, oh, I was told this is a good tea location. Let me go there. Oh, this is great. Oh, this tea is fantastic. It is just kind of touring with them because they were told to do that. And so you're kind of getting that advertisement because they were advertised to almost feel. It doesn't feel like I'm watching an advertisement. The series always has this feel of I'm just going with them as they're touring the stuff and enjoying the sights with them. But the thing that I've always, and it's the thing that I enjoyed with the first season and I enjoy it again with the second season, is this show is an encompassing feel and embodiment of Iyashike. It is this feeling of just going out with these girls, finding some secluded campsite, pitching up a tent and sitting down, enjoying noodles or coffee or a cocoa as you watch a beautiful scenery. And it's like this culmination of multiple things that make it work so well. It is the music that always feels warm and comforting. It's the tone that sets. It's the beautiful artistries of the background art that the artists do with making the scenery that just pulls you in. It's the very unique and inviting and comfortable art style of the characters themselves. They feel like a bundle of joy that you just want to hang out with and enjoy the view with. The way that they make all that stuff come together, that make it almost feel warm and it feel inviting, is always fascinating to me. And it's something that was incredible with the first season and just continues on with the second season. I cannot express how much this show is so warm and inviting. And granted, while it doesn't feel like anything's really happening, which I guess if you're looking for something that's doing stuff and there's story and there's developments and all this kind of stuff, you're not going to find it. It's just like this inviting warmth and relaxation that the show does. Like I said, an embodiment of Iyashike, the feeling of if you're having stress, if you're looking to kind of just settle down and relax, this is a show that for some reason, every time I watch it, it just pulls me in and says, chill, just chill and relax. And that's what I've always loved about the series. And it's, again, something that is continuing on to this one. I loved getting Rin's backstory, seeing her getting into camping for the first time. I I always feel bad with Rin because I always feel like she always purposely goes out of her way to not be with the group. And they even had like a group camping session and she just runs off on her own on her moped. And it's always like, girl, you need to get in the group. And I think it's for a reason. They're definitely technically trying to chisel away at that over time. And it's something that was definitely obviously pointed out in this season where you start getting her worrying about Nadeshiko. She's kind of seeing, you know, stuff that she wants to get involved with now. So it does feel like she's getting out of that shell. I just always feel bad when she's not there because, like, girl, come on in. Nadeshiko, you need to pull her in harder. You're not being Yankee enough.
There was the entire exchange between her and her grandfather was absolutely phenomenal. I loved that set of scenes so much.
He's such a big teddy bear.
He is he, like, so comes awesome.
comes in is like, yeah, your smartphone's always charging, it's gonna drain your battery, let me go get a part, drives off in the middle of the night. I'm like, you're such a big teddy bear. I love him so much. It sucks because it warmed my heart seeing the scenes with them too, because it technically is something I always wanted to do with our dad. As I always had this want that I wanted to go out biking with him, and we never got that chance, but it hit home watching them two go out there together, even though it's granddaughter and grandfather. It's just, it's still that same feeling. It's just kind of, you know, taking her under his wing and driving around together. It just was way heartwarming.
But yeah, the most important thing, just so everybody knows, I have discovered that there is little tents for small dogs. And so I need to get one for my wiener dog so I can have a cute little tent for my wiener dog. This is the most important thing that I discovered from this season of this show.
Figure you would have known that already. I figured you would have known that a long time ago.
You would think being doing things for animals all the time, you would think that I would have known about these miniature tents, but no, I did not know that.
I have to admit, I am very surprised that you were able to get to this season. They literally had like one of the most darkest scenes probably in anime history in a long time. And that was Rin having her little dream about burning the acorns. That was dark, dude. That got real dark. They were like screaming bloody murder as she was burning them alive.
That was kind of messed up.
It was kind of like, wow, this kind of got dark.
We hear these and it was almost like one of those kind of fourth wall joke type things where you always see them where the pine cones will go konnichiwa or whatever, and
yeah,
and
they would gather them all season up,
and you're always thinking about the fact that technically she's using these for fire, and no, then they actually do it with it. Was like, that's messed up.
Yeah, they were so happy to see her, and then she just burned them alive. I loved Aoi and Akari. They had like this goofy little kind of liars thing that they were doing for a while there. They're way cute. Yeah, a lot of really cute moments, and just a lot of, like I said, relaxation and enjoyment seeing them together. But yeah, definitely a lot of good stuff, and hopefully we get another season of it. It seems like it's doing really successful, so enough that they did a short and a second season, so hopefully we'll see more. Hopefully more advertisers get with them so they can pay for more episodes of touring locations. yeah. That's Layback Camp Season 2. Definitely check that out if you're looking to relax and sit back and enjoy. Yep. Dr. Stone, Stone Wars, our next one. This one streamed on Crunchyroll and Funimation. It ran for 11 episodes, done by Studio TMS Entertainment. The source is a manga. The genres are adventure, sci-fi, and shonen. And, of course, the creator behind this one is Riichiro Inagaki, who did Ice Shield 21. And it's definitely present in their art style. And for those who don't know what Dr. Stone is, essentially takes place in modern time. We follow a guy named Senku who's at school. He's kind of an absolute nerd, and he just loves everything science. And he has a friend named Chrome, and Chrome is, you know, just about to go confess his love for a girl. And right when he's going to do that, everybody on the planet just gets this like light appears, and everybody gets turned to stone. And then jump forward thousands of years, and Senku breaks out of this stone form and discovers later on there's like this kind of certain chemical reaction from this one like bird or bat poop or something like that that kind of combines the perfect way, and it creates a serum that can actually break the stone. And so Senku, being an absolute science nerd, now in a essentially forward in time where, you know, nature and everything has taken over and science has basically crumbled to the ground, wants to recreate mankind, but kind of do it fast forward. Since he knows all the knowledge that mankind has kind of developed, he feels that he can speed up the process of mankind kind of re-evolving into the science age and you know, space travel and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, so he quickly frees his friend, not Chrome. I said Chrome earlier. It wasn't Chrome. His friend was Taiju. I'm sorry. He frees Taiju immediately, and they start kind of trying to rebuild mankind, one science experiment after another, and releasing people from stone form. And yeah, in the first season, he quickly frees a guy named Tsukasa, who had his own thoughts on how to rebuild mankind, and that is to basically get rid of adults who want to use science, and get rid of science too, basically. And not really science. He just wants to get rid of adults, because he mentions later on that he doesn't dislike science. He just doesn't want the bad things of science to rebuild. He wants to recreate basically a new society that won't have the bad things that mankind, or at least adults, had in the previous setting, in the previous world. And this is kind of counter to Senku. Senku's like, no, I just want to rebuild. I want to free everybody, and I want to do science. So they obviously were at odds. They separate. Senku discovers a village of people who technically have been around the entire time everybody else was in stone form. So it was like this new tribe that was developed from the ground up. And going into the second season, we now have essentially the two sides, Tsukasa's tribe and basically the town of science that Senku's now kind of building, are now going to go at war, such as the title would lead you to believe, the Stone War. So that is the premise of the second season, is this battle between the two, science versus strength, basically, because Tsukasa has the cave that has the serum, and so he's freeing all the strongest people that he can possibly get, while Senku is developing science tree and technology to fight against him. So, yeah. Did you end up getting caught up?
Yes.
You did? You finished it?
Yes, I did.
Yay! So, yeah, what's your thoughts on it? And I'll let you go first.
On a side note, before I get into how I felt about this particular season, I was very mixed on the character artwork in the show. It's it wasn't exactly my cup of tea per se. It's very, there are a lot of hard line characters, very, with the kind of cracks going through them.
But, seaweed head that Senku has.
Yeah. I was very mixed on the artwork at first, but I have started, and this might be one of those, Andrew used to make the joke of what did you call it? The
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm syndrome. And maybe that's what this is, but I'm actually, this artwork is really starting to grow on me, and I don't know why. Just a lot of, I'm starting to really like the way that these characters look, and there is a uniqueness to them that I just am actually really starting to like, and I can't place what it is about it that is making me like it. I don't know that I'll ever figure it out, but I'm starting to like the character designs.
I'm pretty much in the same boat.
It's strange. It really is. Now, storyline. I do like it. I thought that this was a very interesting way to resolve the conflict that we had set up in the first season, and getting to this was very interesting to get this all resolved the way it is. I'm wondering what is in the future. So don't get me wrong. I am very much excited about seeing anything in the future.
Did you like that title at the end?
What's
this
that?
Has all been a prologue?
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Well, what that usually kind of insinuates that this is kind of just an opening, and that there's something completely, typically something like a completely different direction we're going in. And it's like, wait, so yeah, that's quite a bold statement to make, I guess is the way I would put it.
It is. And it is set up for doing whatever they want to do. It's this is such an open story, because I mean, and I've talked about this before when people have asked me, you know, what kind of story would I write? And I said, I would set yourself up for as much openness as possible. And this is set up for that. It is completely and totally open. They could do whatever they want at this point. You have so many things you can explore at this point. You have so many different directions you can go at this point. You have the full arsenal of everything that we have now, and you have the complete openness to do whatever you want. So yes, it is set up for nothing but success at this point, unless the writer completely takes a nosedive. I can't see anything going wrong at this point. It's open to do whatever they want.
No, I kind of agree. This show itself overall has always been a fascinating to me, because I don't really care so much for, you know, explanation of science kind of stuff. And it does that a lot. It does, like, every episode, at least one time, they're going to have suddenly out of nowhere Senku starts explaining how he's going to create something. But it's always done in a very entertaining way. It is always shocking to me, and I think it has a lot to do with just very clever directing and how they portray it in the adaptation. I'm sure it's probably equally as entertaining in the manga, but I just see the way that this animation enhances a lot of those scenes is just does it a lot of justice. And I think I wasn't really too like overly sold on the overall story until they got into Byakuya and how the tribe was created, and that stuff really did sell me on the world overall, and I was completely sold at that point. Now, granted, my only sticking point that I've ever had in the series as a whole was Tsukasa. He didn't make any sense to me. He was a character that, and I was kind of chopping it up as mistranslation early on, but I never understood how you had this character who was like, I'm going to get rid of adults because they polluted the mankind, and yet he's suddenly freeing every big, huge dude that he can find. He's freeing people that were in working class, so obviously they were adults. So it's like, well, what's your cutoff point for adults? Because you have a lot of people that are obviously not children that are working alongside of you. And I guess it was just kind of more... Turn it into, like I said, possibly mistranslation, and it was more going for the idea of not necessarily adults, but more so older adults, people that were, you know, established foundations of the world that was old, basically all of your old people, the people that were in politics, the people that were controlling how society functioned. Not necessarily a 25-year-old that is working on a sonar radar or something like that. So it was confusing at first. It didn't make much sense, but at the same time, it established it well enough to make this kind of, yeah, technically a prologue to the world itself, and the idea that you have muscle and tribalism versus science and progression that Senku wants. And that was really, really well done. In the end, I really did enjoy it. I agree with you. I really did like the way they resolved things. It was a good way of kind of wrapping things up. Technically, the other bad they revealed later on, again, was another one of those, okay, sure, whatever, throw that in there, I guess. Make an enemy of my enemy as my the enemy of my enemy as my friend kind of aspect. Okay, sure, let's go with that. But it was really sweet the way they kind of concluded everything, and I'm with you, and I'm excited for what they'll do going forward with the series, just because there's so many possibilities, and I really am liking the characters that they've developed so far, and the endless possibilities that they've kind of created with the characters and the world itself all together. There's a lot of suspension of disbelief as well. Why? I almost thought at some point that they were going to reveal that going through the stone process, being stoned and then being having the stone remove you, or removing the stone from somebody, gave you some kind of supernatural abilities. Because a lot of the characters are, like, over the top, super powerful in certain ways, which doesn't make any sense, because, like, you would have a character, oh, this character worked on worked on sonar. So suddenly now he is an expert archer that can pinpoint shot, and he's able to hear things from 100 miles away. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure, that makes sense. This guy, Hyuga, is, like, super crazy powerful with his spear and able to chop trees in half with a spear on a stick. Sure, okay. Tsukasa can take down 5 lions at once with his bare hands. Sure, okay. There's a lot of suspension of disbelief in the idea that you're trying to ground this in science and reality, and yet you have all these characters that are like, okay, before Tsukasa freed them from the stone, they were working at a desk job or something like that, and then suddenly out of nowhere they know how to jump across trees and have crazy survival instincts. They've already established only a year has passed. A little bit over a year has passed at the end of this second season. So it's like, you can't expect these people to have, like, learned how to jump across trees and be, like, crazy tribal in mere months. But I guess we're doing that. So it makes it more entertaining. I know. I'm sorry. Suspension of disbelief. But that doesn't ruin the show. It's still fantastic. Great characters. Great premise kind of set up, and I am really excited for what's going forward on it. Hopefully we get more. I don't know. I don't think that they announced another season after that. Let's see. It says Dr. Stone Zoku Hin. Yeah, looks like another season's been announced already, so good stuff. Looking forward to more of that.
I was going to throw in, I still do get a kick out of Senku and his... The way he comes off when he talks about some kind of science. It's almost like this kind of this looking down on you for not knowing what he's talking about, or you know, somebody's like, so how are you going to do this? Foolish human, we're going to do this, obviously. I just love the way he comes off when he does that. No, he doesn't say foolish human. It's just the way he comes off.
Yeah, I'm not following you there. I never really got that from him.
I did.
He does have a demeanor.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a foolish human. He's just got this kind of
he's very vibe. Sure of himself.
Yeah, he's got this vibe that just absolutely sells him as a character, because. If you were to just take some clip out of context, you'd be like, this guy is so full of himself. But when you actually watch him, it's absolutely, he pulls it off pure, perfectly.
Yeah. Good stuff, though. Definitely another good, solid season. And like I said, looking forward to another season, definitely when it does come, so. And it is cool. This is one of those ones where I'm kind of happy that Crunchyroll's in, like, really good connection with TMS Entertainment, because a lot of the kind of documentaries they've kind of released on it, on the making of it, does seem like the creators are pretty gung-ho and passionate about it. And it definitely shows. It's visually, it always looks pretty solid. And, yeah. So, you know, they're putting a lot of passion into it, so. Good stuff. Dr. Stone, Stone Wars. Check that out. That's interesting to you. The Quintessential Quintuplets is the next one, or 5 Toban no Hanamyome. Double integral, I guess. I don't know why they... I guess math. I don't know why they can't just say second season, but whatever. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes, done by Studio Bibbury Animation Studio, which did replace Tezuka Productions, who did the first season. Definitely does show. No, specifically, Futoro definitely looks different in the second season. But yeah, for those that are aware, The Quintessential Quintuplets follows a guy named Futoro, who is living with his father and sister in kind of a pretty rundown apartment. They're kind of struggling to get by. He is completely sold on the idea of, you know, studying really hard and getting really good grades so they can pull his family out of poverty. And at some point, he is confronted by a man in order to tutor his 5 daughters, which are quintuplets, as the title would lead you to believe. And he's a very rich man. His daughters live in a really lavish apartment, and they are all pretty dumb. The show is not, the story is not afraid of establishing that these girls are pretty dumb. But each one of them seem to excel in something, and they are kind of hoping that they will get better. It's just for some reason, as Futaro is now becoming their tutor, they all seem to have some kind of conflict. Like specifically Yotsuba just likes helping other people all the time. She often never really has any regard for herself. She just, if somebody asks for help, she will help them. And that leads to her being pretty dumb. She doesn't really study herself. She doesn't do anything study-wise. And so that always is a distraction for her. Miku is pretty dead set on a lot of kind of older folk, not really folk, older established figures from Japanese history. She's a huge Japanese history nut, but everything else she doesn't really give much attention to. So that's her sticking point. Nino is just kind of a more rebellious girl. She doesn't really want to have anything to do with Futaro. Itsuki is kind of seems more kind of an all-rounder character. Ichika is very focused on working with her acting job, so that distracts her a lot. So each one of them has something that's distracting them or an inability to accept any help from Futaro. So this becomes his big challenge, is how to kind of gain their respect or gain their trust and allow themselves to be helped by him, as he's also trying to keep up with his own studies and everything and pay the bills. So yeah, that kind of continues on in the second season. At some point, they did establish in the first season that Futaro does have like this picture from when he was younger of this random girl that he met on a trip. And so there is kind of this goofy little almost nisekoi thing that they have attached to it, where who's one of these girls could possibly be this girl from his past? Which one could it be? And that obviously has to be the one that he chooses, right? But it is funny that they kind of introduced that aspect, but Futaro never really seems like he cares. Like, you have established this, here's the girl, the one that he has to find, and then he's like, it doesn't seem like he cares too much. Even though he does keep the picture, he doesn't seem to, it's not his driving focus. His driving focus is to, you know, learn, you know, pull his family out of poverty, teach these girls so they can learn, all that kind of stuff is his focus. Even though, again, they kind of bring it back in the second season again. And I was actually surprised they actually somewhat resolved that question mark. But, yeah, most of the focus of this season so far was, it seemed to have about a couple arcs to it. The first arc really being kind of this build up to this, this exam, him quitting, them trying to pull him back in, looking a little bit more into the girl's history with their mother, and then later on kind of really getting into another exam they have to kind of tackle. And the thing that was interesting most about this season is it got a lot more heavier than I thought the writer was actually willing to get into. With the first season, it really did feel like goofy rom-com, not really rom-com, but goofy harem comedy. And the fact that you just have him trying to gain the trust of all these girls and goofy shenanigan happens. With the second, and it did have a little bit of building relationships with Futaro in the first season. A lot of it was focused on Miku and a little bit in Ichika. But with the second season, it really did kind of turn more into the realm of, okay, now all these girls really do respect him, and they each individually have a reason for, you know, wanting to pursue him. Like, now we're full-on harem at this point in the pursuing department. And like I said, I was kind of surprised by how heavy it got. Like, how much these characters started really having conflict with each other and with themselves in pursuing Futaro. Getting some of these characters being very forward and making decisions that you normally don't see. You have that moment where a character goes, you know, I like you. Oh, I didn't hear it. And then they go, oh, well, never mind. And then come back and go, no, never mind. You're going to hear it. Having those moments where they're like, oh, crap. Okay, now we're going. Now we're full on cylinders at this point. One of the characters got really nasty. And I hate the character now at this point because of it. But again, it was one of those moments of like, whoa, I did not think the writer was willing to go this direction, because it kind of, it is one of those things where you kind of ruin a character. And is a writer willing to do that just to, yeah, technically make them more human? Like, because people do that. Like, people are willing to cut some throats to get what they want. And I was really surprised the writer was willing to have a character do that, because I'm wondering if the fandom for that character would be willing to accept that at this point. But that is kind of showing of how the writer seems to have evolved this series so far. And yeah, you can probably chop it up as me being a little bit too, looking into a little bit too much. But going from a series that was a goofy harem in the first season to a series that is really kind of trying to make these characters not pull punches and have to figure out what is more important to them, family or love or relationships or all that kind of stuff is muddled in their minds at this point. I was surprised. I was actually very much surprised. I literally thought going into the season it was going to be, okay, more goofy harem fun. Let's just have fun. It did more than that. And that is definitely interesting to go into. So I'm still Team Miku. I still want Yatsuba to win, even though she's technically not getting much attention. But Nino did grow on me this season. I still think that she's like the most cutthroat of all of them. But she's honest about it, so it's okay. I think it's not a bad thing to be willing to push people aside if you're upfront about it. I guess that sounds bad. I guess I didn't put that in the right. We finally get to see the dad, and the dad's great. Even though he's a jerk and he doesn't understand his daughters, but he was still a nice welcome addition to the story. And they have a third season announced at this point, and they put in really interesting cliffhanger at the end of it that I got into spoiler discussion for. You didn't finish this, did you, Chris?
No, actually, I'm like really questioning whether or not I want to now.
Okay, so I won't say that we weren't going to do spoilers. I did talk spoiler discussions of my thoughts on how it ended in my video review of it, which I don't think I've posted yet. I haven't recorded. Yeah, I haven't posted it yet. So if you guys want my spoiled thoughts on the ending and what's been going on so far and what I've been hinting at in my discussion here, definitely check out my video review of Quintessential Quintuplets. I will have a segment at the end of it where I'll get into spoiler discussions so you can get my thoughts there. So,
well, even going based on your text, I was like, do what?
I'm trying to be vague about it, and I'm like, holy crap, Chris, this is going in a direction I didn't think it was going to go in, and I'm actually pretty surprised the writer's willing to do this. I don't know. It's up to you if you want to know about it, but I think you should get caught up on it. I think you'll enjoy it. You like harems.
Yeah, you only have two characters left that could be what you were mentioning in the text, and based on what you were saying here, and it's like, I really don't know what I want to do on this next show now, because I was going to be going into it thinking, you know, it was going to be a fun continuation of the harem antics that we had before, and now it's like, I mean, it's not like there wasn't those kind of hints of that they were actually taking this a little bit more serious than most harems. So it's not like it's a huge surprise that they went more, I'm guessing that they're effectively going more down the road of a drama harem, which is not something that you would normally do in a show like this. So,
And it's hard to say that it's not heavy drama. It's just kind of cutthroat, I guess. It's like they are struggling with the fact that there is five of them and there's only one him. It's really the case. So I don't know. It's hard to really peg, but it is definitely doing, like I said, a lot more than I thought it would. It's not just a harem. So
I might have to see that. Like I said, I'm juggling back and forth of. Obviously it's not what I was expecting it to be, so I'm not sure if I'm interested in it as much, but at the same time, it also is now unlocking a different thing of, I almost want to experience this different type, and it sounds like it's really breaking the mold of what what you would expect out of a harem. And that's really why I'm very much interested in this now. So I think I actually will go back.
Yeah, and I'm going to feel like I'm overselling it. Well, did you finish the first season, or were you like part of way through it?
Oh, absolutely finished the first season.
Oh, well, I'm surprised you didn't get caught up on this one. Yeah, maybe we'll get your thoughts on it later.
It just never got around to it type thing.
Well, you'll definitely probably get caught up by the third season, and then you can probably give your thoughts on it at that point.
Most likely.
And then you can check out Chris, you can check out my video on our YouTube channel to see my thoughts on what happened. But yeah, that's the Quintessential Quintuplets second season, or Faitobun no Hananyomi Double Integral. That time I got reincarnated as a slime second season, or Tensai Shitara Slime Datakin second season. This stream on Crunchyroll went for 12 episodes, I think. Was it 12 episodes? Question mark? Yes, 12 episodes. And, yeah, so being done by Studio 8-Bit. And for those that are aware, this basically follows a guy who is isekai'd into another world as a slime. And unlike Spider, so I'm a spider, so what? He gets quickly out of the dungeon that he's thrown. Sorry. He's a slime, he's in a dungeon, and he starts absorbing things, getting powers from them, and eventually runs into a dragon and frees the dragon from its kind of captured state. And that causes weird changes in the world for monsters. And as he escapes the labyrinth, he starts building a nation of monsters, basically, giving them titles that they advance and evolve into intelligence beings. And like I said, building a nation and the effects it has on the world. So your thoughts on this slime continuing his adventures? Because I did not get caught up. I will be getting caught up, though. Just not yet.
Yeah, you so have got to catch up on this. This is one of the cool... They've done so many cool things this season that it's really hard to kind of quantify. I mean, yeah, I can say the same thing as I usually always say is, you liked it before, you're going to love it now. They're doing a lot of the things that you liked before. They're just doing more of it and other things. And so it's really, because one of the things that you would think of, if they're doing the same things that they've already got, won't they run out of things that they can do with this? No, they're branching out in different things. So it's really neat to see the continued evolution of Rimuru, where he's not stuck in one spot. He's continuing to get stronger and learn new things and do different things to kind of change the dynamics of what's going on around him. It's really hard to, you know, kind of point at different things without spoiling things, but we have been introduced to a couple of new characters. Some situations have been resolved. Other situations are being birthed at the same time. And there's another one that's just out in there's two other things that are just out in the open that need to be resolved. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to see more. I hope they don't linger too long. Is this one the one that was going to get split cord, or did we just not get when the next part is coming out, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, they have a part two. It's saying July.
Okay, so yeah, I can't wait. When Andrew had mentioned that they were split coring, it was like, oh no. I mean, they did okay with the chapter pause, but it was really in a bad spot. I really wanted to see more of what was going on. But I guess
chapter pause, you're calling it a chapter pause. I call it a page turn. You're going to call it a chapter pause.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's one of those that when you were mentioning it the other day or a couple weeks ago of that they were going to end up stopping it or something like that, I was like, they're in an absolutely bad spot to stop right now. Please don't do that to me. And it, yeah, they did okay with it, but I'm still kind of itching to see what's the next. I want the next episode to be popping up already because I really want to see what's happening next.
Is 8-Bit taking a page or taking notes from Netflix and their crappy page turn endings?
It, like I said, it wasn't bad because they resolved a lot of issues. So it's not as bad as I was expecting it to be. But it's still, there's so much thing, so many things that are going on at the same time, that the most crucial things that needed to be addressed were addressed. The other things are still out in the open. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You'll see what I'm talking about when you go and catch up. It, like I said, the most crucial things were addressed. The other things still out in the open.
But the major question is, and you have to answer this for me because I'm really curious at this point, being as I started getting into the OVAs so that I can start into the second season, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't at this point just because of the split core, but I probably will get into them once I get done with all the first impressions for the next season. But The big important thing that I have, and I think it really is going to establish if I care to get back into the series or not, is Gabaru still amazing?
Yeah, he's all right. I never had a problem with Gabaru. He kind of goes to the background, really. On all honesty, Gabata gets to shine a lot this season.
Sorry, you killed the joke. It's all right. did the Tsundere dragon come back yet? Or is that spoilers?
That is huge spoilers, and I'm not going to answer that. Even by saying that, I'm technically spoiling. And that's what sucks. You caught me in a trap on
man,
that.
Man. Tsundere dragon. Blush. It's not like he wants to come back for us or anything. All right, that's the time I got Reincarnated as a Slime second season. Definitely check that out if you haven't already. Last one we have is Be the Beginning Succession. This one streamed on Netflix, ran for 6 episodes. Supposedly was supposed to have 12, but we only got 6, so I'm not sure what's happening with the other 6. Or if 6 more were even promised to begin with, we never know. The studio is Production IG, the source is an original, and this one's genres are action, sci-fi, mystery, police, psychological thriller. And for those that are not aware, this one in the first season basically opens up with a guy named Keith Flick, who is a kind of a genius mastermind, not mastermind, a genius detective who cracked like a really complicated code when he was younger, and now as an adult he is a detective that goes out and solves mysteries, and he gets kind of caught up alongside Lily and a couple other police officers as they are starting to look into this killer bee who is going around killing people and then leaving a mark behind, which is like this big bee, and he's called the Killer Bee Killer. And as they're kind of looking into this killer, they eventually start uncovering this kind of history about this facility that had these almost kind of farm-raised children that were all kind of genetically altered. It gets into kind of this backstory about these beings that mankind kind of dug up in the past and that they were trying to almost, clone in a way. But, that kind of leads to like this almost kind of supernatural feel to the story, as there's all these kind of kids in the background that have these incredible powers that are kind of the story being told on the side, along with Keith Flick and Lily and all them trying to uncover it. So getting the second season, we start getting into more of a lot of the kids from that facility, which we thought were dead before, are still alive. They are trying to kind of rebuild what they were doing previously, kind of rebuild society in a way so that they can kind of coexist with mankind. and, you know, getting into what those intentions are and what they're going to actually entail. It gets a little more into Keith Flick and his kind of inner struggle with the loss of his loved one. Getting more into that was in this season as well. And really kind of getting into the overall world and how a lot of things are intertwined with these children and what they did in these experiments, the destruction of the facility, the connection to that stuff and the royal family, what those kind of genetically altered children would kind of mean for mankind as a possible, I guess put it as, you know, a super drug, so to speak, that could possibly change the map of humankind and what all that means for everybody. So, yeah, I guess that's most of what we get into without getting into spoilers. I do think this is a great addition to the Be the Beginning series. I did enjoy the first series. A lot of my enjoyment was around Keith Flick. I thought kind of the more cop drama side of the storytelling was fantastic. Getting into Keith Flick, his history, his loved one, the loss of his loved one, all that stuff was fantastic. And then on the other side, you have these children that had these kind of super abilities, getting into the facility that they were from, the history of that facility, almost felt kind of like a distraction. I was drawn into the show initially because of those characters, and their character designs were very unique, almost kind of stylish clown almost looking. But they weren't really my focus of entertainment for the first season. It was in Keith Flick and them solving the cases and all that cop drama stuff. But when they did get into the children, it was really cool because the animation that Production IG was putting into the show was incredible. Like, these fight scenes looked great. I mean, they had this whole aspect of, yeah, these people are going super speedy fast when they're fighting, but the show would kind of slow it down so that they'd be going at normal speed to us, but everything else, like raindrops, were going like super slow because it was showing how fast they were. The animation was incredible. And so I was fine with those kind of breaks from the cop drama to see that kind of stuff. And that getting into the history of them was interesting. But getting into the second season, it was almost like it flipped. A lot of the focus pulled away from Keith Flick and Lily and all of them. And the focus went straight more into Cuckoo, all the children from the facility, and more into the royal family and their connection to that facility. So it was kind of it was kind of disappointing because it pulled away from the one thing that I loved so much about the first season, but it started to give me more idea of what's going on with them on that side, on the other side of the actual coin. And so it is a nice addition to the series, and it does have me excited for what's going forward. The only problem is that, like I mentioned earlier, the issue here is that it stops. Like, this is, like we mentioned earlier, this is a prime example of page turn stop. Because literally there's like a fight starting and the show stops. Like, I was looking for the next episode and it's a really terrible cutoff point. And so it gets that it is one of those things where it does lead me to say, if you like Be the Beginning, the original series, wait until there's more episodes coming out for this, because obviously this isn't it. And this is a really bad stopping point for it. So you might be better off just waiting until more episodes come. That way you can get the full story of what they're doing with the second season. I don't know if they're going to call it Succession and then just going to add episodes, or if they're going to have, I don't know, continuation. Be the Beginning and continuation or something. But it is a rough cutoff point. But it does have me excited for what they're doing with the story overall, because, like I said, it does technically expand a lot of the aspect of the other side of the story that technically was, yeah, technically introduced in the first season, but not really. I didn't get to know the characters well enough, and I really did feel like I got to know the characters at this point. I got to know Cuckoo better, I got to know Yuna better, I got to know Izanami better, and that's exciting for what they're doing going forward. So the only problem I have with the season, besides the cutoff, my only problem that I have was I think the quality of animation did dip quite a bit compared to the first season. Like I said, a big draw of the first season with the combat sequences was the incredible, not just the animation itself, but the creativity in the animation itself was stellar. With the second season, a lot of it felt just... Instead of doing, like I said earlier, where they're, like, super fast, and so it slows down the world as they're going, like, normal speed, with the second season, it just felt like they're going slow. Like, everybody suddenly is just, like, sluggish slow when they're fighting. And, yeah, the fighting sequences themselves are, you know, well put together. There's actual technique to it. But it just feels slow and not entertaining. So, definitely not as stylish and bombastic as they were in the first season. But it still worked. I think the first season had a lot more impactful moments, whereas the second season didn't. But again, this only has 6 episodes, so they might have more coming around the corner with it. But yeah, still a solid series, and I am definitely intrigued by it and looking for more. I think probably the highlight of the season was definitely Keith Flick still in the end, because some of the more impactful emotional moments were still surrounded with Keith Flick. His inner turmoil with the loss of his loved one was definitely still a huge pinnacle point of the series. So, yeah. Got me excited for more, but unfortunately, like I said, it's hard to sell based on the fact that it just has such a bad stopping point, which Netflix is known for. Eventually, Netflix is... I'm starting to... And it's funny because Production IG could be at fault here, but it's like Netflix keeps doing it so often, all I can think of is it's got to be Netflix's fault. with their willingness to drop... And it is so funny because it's like you would think with a company that's so dead set on binging and not releasing things episode by episode, they would be totally against the idea of releasing only 6 episodes of something that feels like there's 12. And yet here they are. And here we have Ghost in the Shell did the same thing. And yeah. Anyways, that's Be the Beginning, Succession. Like I said, I recommend waiting until more episodes come out, but it is a good continuation of the series. And I'm hoping with my frustration with them kind of going from Keith Flick to the kids from the facility, that hopefully eventually the writers can kind of get them to balance it a little bit better. That way we don't feel like we're drowning one side or the other whenever one story is being told. So, yep, that's my thoughts. Check it out if that sounds interesting to you. And that's it. That's all the shows we have. That's the end of the winter 2021 season. We're done. We're moving on. It's time to start binging and getting caught up on the current season, which I think we're on 3 episodes in so far with some of the shows.
I don't think so. I haven't gone.
Most are two.
I haven't poked through all of them. I've only watched the first episode of.
They're all over the place.
Slime Girl.
I hate that.
The girl who does the Saint Girl, and the don't tease me Nagataro. Don't toy with me. Yeah, Slime Girl. Slime Girl is Aoyuki. I don't know if you caught that before. I was like, "Oh, what is that? Her? Is that her? Is it really her?" Yeah, it's totally her.
She's getting a lot of main characters now, which is a good thing because she was always kind of side charactering a lot before with like Cruel Tepes and Clementine and all them. So now she's finally getting the respect that she deserves.
It is kind of nice to hear her in a more less serious tone type character. It's nice to hear her. And that's why it was hard to pick her out at first. I almost didn't believe it until it but you know how she has that very unique tone to her voice, and it kept making me go, there's no way that's her. And finally I had to go and look it up, and yes, it is her.
See, that's the frustrating thing, because it looks like so many shows right now are only one episode.
That's what I was saying.
A good portion's 2 episodes, and then a few shows are like 3 episodes. So it's like, this is going to make the first impressions really difficult, because we're going to have some shows that are going to be way too deep already.
Yeah, I haven't nosed through all of them. I mean, even last night, I only watched Nagataro and Slime Girl because I just didn't want to start an entire show that, like we were talking about, did I do Uma Musume?
I was so far behind on that. It was like I would have to set aside literally, you know, four hours to finish off that show. And it was like, I didn't have 4 hours. I had 1 hour. So I might as well just go ahead and watch a couple of episodes of, you know, Slime Girl and Nagataro.
That was literally my last couple days, was literally like binge watching Kimono Jaihin and binge watching all of Horimiya and binging the rest of all of Hidden Dungeon. It's been Stone Wars. I had to binge all of that. It's been a crazy last couple days, but
yeah, I did. I got
like four videos to record and then we're done.
I did okay. I tried to keep up as much as I could through the season. So I didn't feel like I fell as far behind as I mean, yes, there was a lot of shows that I ended up dropping because even though I wanted to watch them, it wasn't working. And so I am disappointed to let go some of them, but you know, I got most of the ones that I really wanted to keep up on.
Yeah. I'm really happy that I went back to do Kimono Jaihin. I always like finding that stuff that just not really is paid attention to. So yeah, we got good coverage of it. Like I said, I'm only disappointed on, like, I think two shows that I end up dropping, and I'll go back to Slime. So it's full speed ahead at this point. Start diving into these new shows and get some videos out for you guys. I'll probably start doing double drops on YouTube videos to get all these reviews released in a timely manner. I think I'm going to have like a good 7 as of today that I still got to post up, and I do want to start getting into the new season and start getting my impressions of it, because there's a lot of shows coming up in the spring that is exciting, super exciting. But yeah, definitely appreciate you guys sticking with us in the winter 2021 season, and we look forward to y'all joining us into the spring 2021 season. And again, we're at talkspear.com. That's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community forums. The top social forum links at the top. I'm getting tongue twisted. Social media links on the right side, and yes, a link to our YouTube channel, which we definitely would appreciate if you support us there. Again, subscribe, watch our videos there. Helps us out a lot. Again, we're getting pretty close to being monetized, and then hopefully that will make a lot of things improve as well. So definitely appreciate you guys' support. And again, as usual, thanks to all of our Patreon supporters. That support there has been fantastic, and we do appreciate it. And as always, we thank you all for listening. We hope you all enjoyed, and you all take care.
Oos!
Shine a light on my dreams.